All right, welcome to Fear the Boot. This is something that we are trying, and we're going to see how this goes. But for years, there's been kind of on and off talk about whether we ought to or even want to do something like an actual play.
No, we invented the actual play. We're inventing it now.
we're making this up as we go. No one has ever done it before.
Totally new concept.
And so, all right, so here's what we're going to do. We are going to be playing a Skies of Glass game. And at first, I'm only going to release this on Patreon just because I want to get some limited circle feedback on what you guys think. And also, there's a backer level of AP producer that we're now actually going to start doing something with where you guys will have some input on where the games go. But if it looks like it's doing well, then we'll start releasing it to the general audience. But once again, you guys on the Patreon will still have some kind of behind the scenes hand in this.
And this is not the actual Patreon AP backer level reward, right? Because the milestone, as it were, because we haven't actually hit that yet.
Yes, that's correct. That's actually something different. And we actually have a few celebrity or pseudo-celebrity right. GMs that are interested in running some of those games for us or playing with us.
So if that milestone is reached, that will happen. And if this is successful and fun and we keep wanting to do it, we will continue that. They're separate tracks. One isn't going to overwrite the other.
Right. And this game didn't even develop as an actual play originally.
Right.
We were sitting around recording one day and it's like, we really want to play a Skies of Glass game. And we just started bantering about it. And suddenly it's a, well, let's do it on Thursday.
So, and also one of the things I want to let you guys know before we launch into our session zero here is that we are not going to edit this. And we're going to do that for several reasons. One, the amount...
Sanity.
Yeah, the amount of time that it would take for me to edit 3 to 4 hours of recording or to pay Aisha to do it, it's not going to happen.
I don't even think she has the time.
No, I don't think anybody does. But the other reason is, you know, when we got to talk to some people about APs, there was certainly a divide on whether people wanted APs edited and to what extent. But one of the things that we heard as a fairly consistent theme is that what people enjoy about podcasts like ours is that it gives them that sense of being with their own friends and having a conversation about RPGs. And that seemed to come up in actual plays as well, where people said, hey, we want something that feels like a role-playing game, not an audio drama. And we want something. And so I'm just warning you now, if we have a huge interruption, we'll pause it. We're not going to make you sit there and listen to 20 minutes of silence while we go out to a drive-through. But you're going to hear noises in the background. You're going to hear us getting distracted. You're going to hear the side conversations. And also, as part of not being edited, if you have sensitive, tender ears, we're not going to be sitting here throwing around N-bombs or something.
Yeah,
but
this is the part that they should know that Brodor is on the show.
Yes.
You're playing the game, so they're sensitive.
There will be some, I'm sure there will be profanity, and there's not going to be any bleeping. So if this bothers you, just fair warning.
And I brought snacks. And next time we game, I'm going to bring the world's largest apple just for Dan.
He has the them too. Chad and I were playing an online game. I don't remember if we twitched this one or not. But we were playing. I think it was Civ.
Yeah.
And you started eating this apple. I had you on speakers because I had the laptop run to the TV, and so I had the game on my TV, and Chad was coming through the speakers, and then I was just had a headset mic I was talking to you through, and Carla was commenting as well that, like, you started eating this apple, and, like, an hour later, you are still eating it. There's no long breaks here. It's not like chomp, chomp, and then 15 minutes later. No, it's like this continuous process. And we're like, have you been eating multiple apples? And he's like, no. This
and no, I don't take small bites.
No, you could tell by the noise. This whatever he had, this apple was like the size of a basketball. I mean, if the apples had a god, he is eating it.
And I've gained its apple power.
So I can't make it out through a Ziploc box. What did you bring for snacks?
And I am going to totally share this. You guys can,
or drop it on the floor.
Brodo can have that one.
Brodo will eat that.
Okay, so I have carrots in sort of a chip format. Yes. I usually just get whole ones. I have Munster cheese and raisins. And this is like some sort of Scandinavian seed bread. It's like has just a little bit of flour. It's made up mostly of like seeds and shit. So it's low carb. And
sure.
Yeah, sure. It's actually really tasty. Goes good with, you know, if you take one of the little things and put a carrot on and cheese, well, and good.
You know, actually this.
And you guys can have that. It's all
seriously. I'll eat the one that fell on the floor. It's fun.
Sure. Surprisingly, this ties in
cheese and some carrots.
This ties in well to something I wanted to set up both for you guys and for the audience.
Yeah,
which is we are going to do our best to do what we never do, which is follow our own advice.
Oh, excellent.
So we are actually going to run this game in an FTB 9000 compliant way to the best of our ability to do. And Chad, the fact that you're bringing healthy snacks is a great start to that.
Oh, excellent.
In fact, I think everyone had it. Well, no, Wayne's got a soda. Everyone else is drinking water.
Well, and his is diet soda, known him. So
yeah. So, all right.
Family drink diet.
So do you guys, you obviously the people are on the table, not the listeners. Do you guys have any questions about the format of the AP, the format of the game, not the game itself? We'll get to that in a moment. But do you guys have any questions about the format of the AP recordings? And also, by the way, for you guys and also for the listeners, next time, the recording setup is going to be different because right now we're at the usual recording area. What I'm going to do to make this a little bit more freeform is we're going to run what's called Omni mics, which are omnidirectional mics. So instead of a mic facing each of us, there's going to be one or two, probably two microphones on the table that do an omnidirectional recording so we can get more than three people. Because, for example, Eric from Gamer Stable, he's actually going to join this game. We have one or two other locals that might be joining the game. So we can't even fit the people we want to be in the game around one table. And also, actually, that brings up something that I intentionally am going to allow happen. Because Eric can't make game zero, and Brodor can't make game one. And I was thinking about rescheduling so everyone could be here, but I decided, nope. We're going to let the problem happen.
Yeah, and they'll be... Wayne, I'll negotiate with you. You can kill Brodor's character now, and then I'll kill Eric's character in the first game.
Well, let's give him a book to read. Before we release this, let's give him a full-length like book on like nuclear apocalypses or Holocaust order to read. Mm-hmm. I mean, this huge...
The book that Dr. Strangelove is based on.
Sure.
Yeah.
I want this to be something that can choke a horse. And that's what he's going to read.
The best of times, the worst of times.
Yes. Dostoevsky's on nukes.
So, yeah, one of the things that Dan and I were talking about when I first showed up was exactly that. Just deal with all of the normal problems that you would have in your game, like people not being able to attend as regularly as normal. So, invariably, when I have to poop, I'm just going to excuse myself and you guys are just going to keep gaming and then I'll come back. Post poop.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Excellent.
Yeah. Post apocalyptic.
Oh. Was that one that sounded better in your head?
Probably
all the time.
I failed in the execution. I stumbled over the word, too. If this was a regular podcast, I'd attempt it again.
Mm-hmm. Right. But screw them.
From a recording standpoint, I kind of wish Dan's basement was like Dave's basement when we were gaming. So when Brodor is in pooping, we would hear it all.
Yeah.
Yes. Shit, are you kidding? If this cord's long enough, if we know, I'll take it into the toilet with me.
The front row seat we got to every dump.
I'll tweet my nuggets. I'll be like, look at my little poopy.
Okay. No, we're not doing that.
Okay.
So any other questions?
Mike, you're not doing that.
Do you have new character sheets for?
Yes.
Are you going to be uploading those onto the website somewhere so people can grab
one
and use
of the
them
thing,
themselves?
One of the things that I intend to do is because of the fact that you guys are going to be sort of playtesting a revision to the Skies of Glass rules, is I will be releasing some notes on the rules, but what I will make my top priority to do is whenever we release these episodes, I'm going to take the paperwork. So your guys' character sheets, the group template, all that stuff, I'm going to scan it and I will upload those in scanned form so the people at home can see exactly what it is we're using to run this game.
I was thinking website, but now I'm thinking Patreon would be better since only the Patreon listeners will have it at first. At
right. And that's exactly what I was thinking as well. And once again, if this looks like it's going popular, then we can release them more generally as we move forward. But the other thing that I intend to do is now these, we'll have to kind of work out some details, but I may also put up my own game notes so people can see what it was I wrote versus what actually occurred. And I don't have any game notes now because I don't even know what you guys are playing.
Right.
But
hey, you know, I did OneNote, and then I did the OneNote shared drive Google thing and put it up there. Not saying you have to go through all that, but you can do like a Google Doc with your notes.
No, that's true. And then share out the entire folder.
Yeah, just share it out as read only to everybody. That way no one can go in and edit it. I don't like spoilers or opening presents at Christmas before you guys, Christmas morning, so I'm not going to look.
You're not a cheating group anyway. Oh. I'm not worried about that. So
I would never do it for a Dan game, because for a Dan game, it matters. I'm discovering things.
Did you do it for my game?
I don't think so.
Mm. I did.
I'm also not a...
Did you really?
No,
I did not. I'm sorry.
I'm not a competitive GM. You know, I'm not the sort of person where... Honestly, if you look at my notes, all you're going to do is make the game more boring.
Right.
You're not going to win more, because I'm not a aggressive GM anyway. Where this is not Tomb of Horrors.
I think that some people, if you approach it like a novel, like say a murder mystery, you know, they get really wound up and they flip to the back, read the solution, then they can go, oh, now I can go back and I can enjoy the book.
Oh, I've had movies like that where I watch the movie twice because the give at the end makes it more interesting. That was the one about time travel that requires diagrams and such to understand.
Primer.
Maybe it's Primer. It's one where they can only travel back one day.
You can do more than a day for Primer. Yeah. It's however long you're in the machine, that's how long you travel.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was Primer then. Okay, yeah. They tended to do one day. And like that, or Memento was kind of like that. That it was interesting.
Yeah.
Have you ever watched... this is our last tangent.
No, it's not.
Have you ever watched... Somebody did a cut of Memento forward?
No, I haven't. Actually legit cut it up?
Yeah, They cut the movie.
Not just, you know, rewind it.
It's not just the movie played backward. They actually took the last scene, put it first, the second to last scene, put it second, the third to last scene, put it third.
That would take so much time to do.
So you see the movie in order?
I have... seen a couple like that, like the Star Wars prequels, where somebody re-edited them, because I'm not a huge Star Wars fan and I really did not like the prequels, but there is a good movie in there. There's pieces, and like some film students took it, and I think a couple of them did it, a couple of different projects where like one cut out every single Jar Jar Binks and every single Jar Jar like sort of that goofy kid thing.
The big one is that they take the second one, which I think was Attack of the Clones or whatever the second one was, I can't remember the name right now, and they removed every Anakin and Padme scene. So they removed the entire love story.
Obi-Wan.
Oh, man, and it's a completely different movie.
Yeah. All right. So any other questions on format? If not, we're going to get down to Game Zero stuff.
Do you speak in character, Brodor?
I generally do not do voices. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a weird hang-up I have, I guess.
Well, say your character's name is Bill. Mm-hmm. Are you one of these people that does, okay, well, Bill says that he's going to shoot this guy. Or do you do, I put the motherfucking gun in his face.
So, yes, I will speak in character. And then if I have something to address or ask out of character, I'll just, you know, put up my hand and say, hey, out of character.
Yeah.
XYZ, may I have some clarification on this, that, or the other? And then, okay, I'm back in character. You know what I mean? So I'll try to break that immersion for clarification and try to make that clear. But I don't know. I'm weird about voices.
I know they exist, but I'm glad I've never played with somebody that does the, my character says this.
Oh, third person role playing.
Yeah.
Consistent. I mean, sometimes, you know, you do that because that's just how it rolls better. But no, like 100% all the time. Yeah, it's a little weird.
So another Fear the Boot necessity for gaming. Mm. We have our blank note cards.
Excellent.
So people can pass notes.
Mm.
I don't know if we'll need that during character creation, but we'll put it here just in case.
I'm going to write one now.
All right. So if you guys are ready, we always say know your group. So I'm going to ask you guys some questions because now Chad and Wayne, I already know probably most of your answers, but I think we still should do this just for the sake of showing the whole process. Broder, in your case, I really may not know some of these questions.
Well, and I think it's great for disclosure for the audience as well, because the audience may likely have never gamed with any of us. Yeah,
and I'm going to have to figure out how do I want to handle repeating this with like Eric or any other players, especially if their answers contradict any of yours in a major way. So that's going to be interesting to see. So the note passing's already begun. So, all righty. Skies of Glass, post-nuclear game. Nuclear war occurs about 75-ish years in the future. Game takes place about 50 years after that nuclear war. So this is occurring somewhere in the neighborhood of the 125 years in the future. I don't remember the exact dates, but we'll go with that close enough. So let's start with this.
So can I be a 125-year-old man?
Well, I'm conceivably, not likely, but that is one of the questions that let's start with that one. So this is not group template. This is just, I'm just quizzing my players. So I want to make sure I'm running the game you want, right? Mm-hmm. So what are the subjects?
And we want to ask you some of the same stuff so we can, what game do you want to run?
And that is on my list.
As I try and get this point out with a mouthful of cheese.
Yeah. Whatever. Fuck them. We're not editing this. All right.
Do it live. All right. So
not anymore. He doesn't.
He doesn't do it at all. So what are the subjects you guys want the game to deal with? And by subjects here, I'm talking about themes, places, types of NPCs, types of stories.
GCs.
Okay. A GC for anyone who's not followed SOG stuff.
You're not familiar with like the SOG terminology mm-hmm. stuff. So
a GC is a genetic construct. Before the nuclear war, there was a biotech industry. This was many companies. It was an industry. It was not a single company that was developing something like tailor-made animals, designer animals, I guess is a way of putting it, where the animals had unique properties. They could have higher intelligence. They could have glands that produce things like antibiotics. They had purposes above and beyond what a normal animal would serve and had lower biological needs. So these are basically like, imagine kind of GMO super crops, except in the form of animals.
GMO super pets.
Yes.
Yeah, well, one example I used is in a game that I ran, I had a GC horse that was specifically bred to teach people to ride horses. It was intelligent enough that it will make up for your stupidity on it. And yeah. it wouldn't buck you. It would always have that calm mentality no matter how stupid you were being.
So there are a few limitations to GCs. One is there were legal boundaries on what could be done with them. For example, none of them have a human level intellect. You're not going to run into a Planet of the Apes style animal out there. The second thing is some of the GCs were sterile, some of them were not, and some of the ones that were not could interbreed with regular animals, meaning that those bloodlines have become diluted to where you might find a horse that is kind of genetic construct. So it has a strangely high intelligence, but it's not manifesting all the attributes the original product line would have. But people that actually still possess these product lines, that know how to breed them, that know how to do what's called whispering them, which is to know how to activate their commands and what their actual biological properties are, these are people that are very valuable, they're very rare, and they're very in demand, which is not necessarily something you want to be in the setting.
Okay.
So any other questions about GCs? If not... No. Wayne, did you have a particular way you wanted it, or did you just want them to be in there?
They are one of my favorite concepts in the setting.
Okay.
So I just want to make sure that they show up. You know, they don't need to be commonplace because they shouldn't. I like them being a rare thing that you run into, or, you know, maybe they're, you know, of one or two in town or something, but I just want to make sure that they are in the game in some way, because like I said, it is my favorite part of the setting. I'm not sure why I latched onto it so much, but out of everything in the setting, that for me is what I get excited about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Making a note on this.
I personally am open for anything, concept-wise, theme-wise, all that sort of thing, be it SOG or regular game. I'm just delusionally happy to...
Okay.
Just play SOG. I would like, and again, I'm happy to play anything. So this is an interest, so to speak. And if it's not in the game, no problem whatsoever. I would like to really work with, I'd like to see scarcity in the game.
Okay.
I'd like to see, you know, us struggle and everyone around us, you know, you might have one thing and someone else might have another thing, but you need a third thing to make it work. And that guy isn't helping you with his thing. You know, it's
okay.
Yeah.
Scarcity is an easy one to work into the setting. We'll just have, there are some places that are more self-sufficient or well-supplied than others. We'll just avoid those or at least make sure you're not always there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or plugged into the economy.
Definitely the same thing I was thinking was resource management should be a thing.
Yeah.
That, yeah. It, if we have something and it's worth something, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And other people may want it, yeah, or we may need to protect it. Or,
and that doesn't mean that we're hobos and poor bums. It's just, I like the idea of a SOG setting where even the wealthy, quote unquote, the wealthy are, don't have, you just can't have everything you want. You can't have everything you need.
Sure.
It just doesn't exist.
It's just not there to buy.
Right.
I don't know your intent in terms of the game, but I would like to see some sense of community, whether it's just a small group of us. There's, you know, mm-hmm, there's 5 or 10 of us, or we're part of a larger community. I would like to have some semblance of either family or community in the game, something that has value to the character and that the character has value to, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah. But ultimately, I mean, for me, I'm just so happy to be gaming and not game mastering. I would like to see the layers of the world, right? So I know that there is a lot of depth to Skies of Glass that I have not been exposed to. I mean,
it's a Dan game. Yeah, you're going to drown in layers,
right? And so that's
you're going to ask him to pull.
Yeah, because I mean, you know,
okay, he's not joking.
Yep,
one of my flaws as a game master is.
Your greatest strength and your greatest flaw are the same.
Yeah,
it's like my brother says, what's good about it is bad about it.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't sit at a Dan game without a notebook. Mm-hmm. You have to have them just to keep track.
So. I don't, and I just go with the flow, and right, I enjoy the hell out of it. I stopped trying years ago. So
okay.
I would completely agree with that, too. Is like, I like the idea of at least having a hometown with established NPCs, and
I guess, yeah,
I don't mind travel.
Yeah.
Like, travel is perfectly fine. We may leave the town. We may come back.
Right.
Town,
because,
but I want to have, I don't want to be,
yeah,
I don't want to be a wandering band.
Yeah. You don't want to do the travel 1,000 miles, drop a ring in a volcano.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So you don't want to be, hobo. So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'll just put down here, not hobos.
Let me ask, this is a question for the group and for Dan. Do you guys want to play good guys, bad guys, morally ambiguous, neutral, trying to find your way in the world? I mean, it's not really an alignment question, but there are questionable groups and characters out there. Do you want to play any of those? Not knowing what they are. But
can I ask a dumb question?
Sure.
Is at this point, do we want to consider the audience? And I mean, I know we have not taken a poll, but you know, audiences of actual plays. Do they want to hear good guys? Do they want to hear bad guys? Do they want something modern, golden era, you know, golden age of television, Walter White, Walking Dead with shades of gray and ambiguity? Is that something that we want to shoot for, that tone?
I would tell you right now, playing the shining good guys in the setting is, I wouldn't say it is impossible. I would say it is
the last game,
nigh on impossible.
The last game we played, all the group except me were trying to be white knights.
Right.
I thought it made for some really wonderful role-playing moments because the dark reality kept crushing in, and it's not that they're saving the day. They're just trying to push back the darkness and hold on to
their innocence. But they wanted, the setup was they wanted to be mercenaries.
Right.
But
they want to be adventurers. And,
they were naive.
They had a classic, we're going to be D&D adventurers in this harsh, real world.
And that's not a criticism. That was an awesome game.
It's not to say you couldn't do it. I would say it would be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, this is a game that deals with human ugliness in a way that has no breaks.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to play the bad guys, the depths that you could plumb, I think might be off-putting to the audience.
So what about then, you know, we're people who generally see ourselves as good, but recognize that sometimes there are lines that must be crossed to survive or for community. And, you know, we have to live with the decisions we make. But, you know, at the end of the day, I made this decision because it was right for me or for my family, for my clan or my village, whatever. But it's still, they may eat at me, right? I may lose sleep over it or worse.
I kind of look at it like The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. So when you look at how those characters have progressed, they were basically the good guys. But by the time you get to the end, they've done some really, well, it's not over. But by the time you get to where they're at now, they've done some really horrible things along the way. Mm-hmm. But it was always for, not necessarily for the right reason, but that's kind of what I what I see as a character for this, for my character, at least this time, is we haven't established NPCs or any of that, but he will cross lines, but it's in, to protect what's important.
Right. So the question becomes for each of our characters, what are the lines that we won't cross?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd prefer not to be an ist. I've played games where I've been the bad guy and I don't like going down that mental path.
Sure.
Usually when I play games like Fallout and that, I go the other route where I go
super good guy.
Yeah. And that's not for the setting either. So okay. I'm going to be my character, wherever we decide, is going to be in the middle.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. Now I do something, and I mean, I'll have by the end of session zero, I'll have an idea of who my character is as a shell.
Right.
But I've always been the kind of gamer that I learn who my character is as I play them.
Yeah, so sometimes as the dice rolls come out, because you go in thinking something.
Yeah.
And then you roll really poorly a few times and then you start rethinking that.
Right. Okay.
All right. So and it's going to be interesting. Actually, you guys are hitting pretty well. I'm glad to hear what I'm hearing, because what I've decided to try and realign Skies of Glass to do rules wise fits very well with what you were talking about. Because characters are much more, they're about who they're trying to be than what they are. And so you'll see what I mean when I actually get the character sheets and some other stuff. But let's move on to the next question. All right, Skies of Glass is a harsh reality. It's a harsh game. Is there anything you want me to avoid for personal reasons? Because it's this, once again, this is a game where if there's a darkness that's going on, is there any theme you want me to avoid, or is there any topic matter?
My personal preference in any game is, you know, like rape and torture are pretty horrible, but there are things that happen. And I prefer those to be dealt with as fade to black.
Amen.
Yep.
You read my mind. Off camera.
Yep.
You know, handle them, you know, in a Hitchcockian fashion.
Right. Yep.
Right.
Animal abuse is one of those for me.
Sure.
I completely accept it happens.
Wayne, my character was an animal abuser.
I completely accept that it happens in world, but I don't want to see this.
Sure.
Okay. So no on camera rape, torture, animal abuse.
And if we go to, like, Rape Town, Missouri, I think we're just going to turn around and walk away.
Well, hold on. I mean, if you want to blow my O-ring, like, that could happen on camera. Because you can't rape the willing.
No.
That's true. Okay. Is there any other hot button issue? And I'll ask Eric the same question when he's here. Mm-hmm. Is there any other hot button issue that you guys just like, no, we cannot deal with this? It's just going to...
No, abuse the shit out of your kids, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if Pat was here, that'd be a thing, but okay. I don't know that the game's really going to deal with detailed child abuse.
I got you covered.
Brodor started
making himself.
Okay, is there anything you want the game to avoid? And this is a different one, not for moral or... a personal reaction.
Comfort reasons.
This is, we're no longer about getting triggered here. Is there anything you want me to avoid for structural story or rules reason? For example, this particular topic just doesn't interest me, or this kind of rule is just no fun, or I really don't give two craps about this corner of the world.
I can't think of a single thing in this setting that falls into. If we were doing like a superhero game, I'd have a list of things. Space sci-fi, I might even have a list of things, but when it comes to SOG, I can't think of a single thing that I want to avoid, because I know time travel is not involved in the game.
No.
And things like that.
So well, it is. I mean, you're moving forward at the rate of roughly 1 second per second. But so you are all time travelers, just not terribly extraordinary ones.
It's true. Space is a thing in SOG.
Yes.
Like there's Mars bases, there's moon bases, there's space stations.
So these are bases that existed in the future from now, prior to
the nuclear war.
Yep,
correct. And they are functioning and existent and populated, even though the Earth has been blasted.
That's fantastic.
Now,
yep.
Now my thing, okay, now here's...
Our characters may not even know about them, though.
Most people don't.
That was my next question, but we can get into that in a minute.
So here's my thing. These groups coming down from space to Earth, awesome. Us getting in a ship and going into space, that's just not what I want to play.
Okay.
Right. So let me ask this, and I suspect that this is not what we're going to do, because it's not within sort of the theme and vibe of Dark Gritty World. Mm-hmm. Would you be interested in playing those guys that come from, you know, Moonbase Alpha and actually go to Earth for some specific military, government, blah, blah, blah?
I have no problem with that.
I think it would be awesome if one of the characters was someone like that basically in disguise.
Mm-hmm. Right, or AWOL.
Yeah. My character can fit into that, actually. So, which we'll go into that later.
Yes, I have no idea. I have no idea what I'm going to play, etc.
I have this weird idea. I'm curious to see where you guys go with your characters. But I actually did have an idea for a campaign that would accommodate a lot of this. Mm-hmm. We'll see. We'll come to that. PC death.
Yeah.
Player hurt death, yes, no.
Do it. Yeah, I think that
just based on character creation.
Just based on the little bit that you've it's not Traveler.
No. Yeah.
Based on the little bit that you have described so far, I think it's necessary.
Okay.
Yeah. I definitely want it on the table. Yeah. I don't mind making new characters. I enjoy character creation typically. I don't have the same issue that some people have of, you know, well, that's the character I made and now it's gone. And I don't want
to I will break with our Oslian heritage here. That's Eric's last name. If you bring me a full book you have read related to the game, I will not kill your character for at least two games. You are immortal. You can arm wrestle a tank and win. All right, I'm just putting that out there.
You can go to Rave Town, Missouri.
I love having it on the table because I think it leads to a deeper story, especially in a game like this. It doesn't fit every game. But a game where we're dealing with scarcity and where combat is deadly.
Yeah.
I want it to be deadly. I want to have that. I want to go into each combat knowing I'm making this decision, if there even is combat, making this decision, and the character may not make it out.
Yeah, right. That was one of my favorite things of playing classic first edition Harnmaster was even if you were Billy Badass, fights were still very, very scary things. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea that, you know, contrary to Dungeons and Dragons or games of its ilk, that we will seriously weigh the options before we start drawing firearms or hand weapons or whatever.
In SOG, there is no 2.5 combat succession.
Right.
It's not that there's no combat in the game. It's just that, you know, meta, out of character, we stop as players and say, do we really want to risk this? Yeah. I mean, it's only our hometown we're saving. Is it really worth that?
Your characters walk away with scars and possibly traumas.
Yeah.
The next question I had is, what does the GM want from the players? And I've got two items here. And this is specific to this group. I think if it was different people, I might have different requests. But the two that I have is, one, give me the benefit of the doubt. Brodor, something they've talked about you're going to see is that the game is going to be layered. It's the way I tend to run games. There's a lot of complexity. There's a lot of nuance that may include a lot of deception or things that seem to contradict. Give me the benefit of the doubt that I'm not screwing you. Not everything that looks bad is, I mean, if you appear to just be boxed in, at least ask me out of character. Dan, am I boxed in? Are you really, have you just taken me to Rape Town, Missouri? or, you know, have.
Every game session, he's going to play that music from Pulp Fiction or the.
The second thing,
Dan, you are the mayor of Rape Town, Missouri. Oh,
what a title.
You should see the key they give you.
Oh. That's no key. The second thing is, and I don't think this is going to be an issue with you guys, but is just on a personal level, try to get involved in the
fuck
game.
Fuck you.
Yeah. I mean, it's
I need you to spoon feed my ass.
I could gamify the game. I don't want to have
Dan,
to.
Are you handing out bullets?
Yes.
I'm all in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. I might write a novel. That's what happened last time you read this game for me.
What?
I actually wrote a Skies of Glass novel about Metropolis, Illinois.
Wow. Now, this is not Sojourn short story. This is actual full-length novel.
This is full-length novel.
Wow.
Because I was so into the setting that one day before gaming, I asked Dan, so what happened in Metropolis, Illinois? This is a town that is right on a river, has a fort, has, you know, a lot of, it's in a good position. So is it close enough to these cities to have gotten nuked? I ask him all these questions, and he's like, I don't know, write it. So I did.
So are our adventures, are our game sessions, are there going to be some interesting synopses or news bits on the radio program?
Ooh. The answer is it depends on where you go and what you do.
Because I think tying
where
the campaign
we go to make that happen.
I think tying the campaign into the radio drama is an interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
It depends. I like marketing.
It depends on where you go and what you do, and I'll come back to that.
Okay.
Okay, so we're gonna flip that question out. What do the players want from the GM? Specific things you want to request. We may have already covered this under prior questions, but I feel it still needs specific addressing. Or do you guys feel you've already covered this?
I don't need transparency, but I want clarity, right? So just to understand your intent as the game master and the intent of the scene so that I can respond accordingly in character.
Can you give me an example?
Well, so you talked about how there can be nuance and layers and deception and things that may seem contradictory.
Yeah.
I just want to, if it's okay, you know, when you, for example, you said, hey, I'm boxed in, ask me out of character. Dan, am I boxed in? Am I totally fucked here? Is there an option that I'm missing? I just want to be able to know that that's an option to have that question for clarity. Cause I'm not always the most astute. So I might ask questions to say, just so I am clear in character, this is what I perceive. Is that correct?
Okay.
So I don't think this would come up, but if it does, one thing I like from a GM is if they specifically will tell, say, I say that my character does something that doesn't make sense in the setting or in the town or something that my character would know. I like for GMs to say, before you do that, your character would know this.
Yeah.
And provide that information instead of just letting me run.
I'm describing that in my notes here as fair warning about bad ideas.
Yeah. Yep. Not playing your hand for you, but just
like, yep,
level. Exactly. I think Wayne probably illustrated more succinctly than I did that level of clarity and participation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think it would happen necessarily in this game as much as say, if we were playing Epoch of Rhysos, not knowing that setting and those aliens so well, I could easily see my character saying something stupid that would, you know, make someone want to come kill me. This is just the extreme example. I like having those. I have no problem with the GM going out of character to just say, hey, your character would know
this. You love walking into the unknown. You don't like walking into a wall.
Yeah. I like if my character would know something, I want to know that.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a good way to put it.
Anything else on that one?
Are we going anywhere near St. Louis?
That's up for you guys to decide.
I like St. Louis.
Where's the radio station?
Just south of St. Louis.
All right. So there you go. So St. Louis is great.
I like when it comes to post-apocalyptic settings. I really like setting them in real towns.
Yeah.
And I like setting them in places I've been before. Just even though it doesn't look anything like it does in modern day, I enjoyed playing in Cape Girardeau because I know Cape Girardeau. Mm-hmm. I would enjoy playing Suburbs of St. Louis because I know the suburbs of St. Louis. But getting too close to St. Louis does get close to a structured city where things are happening.
I like St. Louis in the Saga setting. I have a vague understanding of kind of what's going on there to a certain extent, not totally. And I really enjoy it. I enjoy that setting. But if we don't go there and don't do it, no problem.
Yes,
St.
Louis.
There's a lot of stuff in the world.
It's dysfunctional. It's successful, but highly dysfunctional.
I kind of like it as the boogeyman in the distance that just keeps poking you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, yeah. See, I'm going to see if you guys have a group idea, because if you don't, you guys keep edging on. I think I've got an idea. All right, but let me ask you one last question here before we get to what are we going to be. The old group template's the next page in.
Oh, shit.
So, last question here that I want to do for our Session Zero thing is this one is from you guys to you guys. What do you guys want from each other? Is there anything like you would want to be like, you know, Wayne, stop playing Soulless Gingers, or
Brodor, stop playing that character you always play. I hate it so much.
Patience. we've not gamed with each other before. Mm. We don't know each other's gaming styles, or at least, you know, from my perspective, you know, from where I'm sitting at the table. So just, you know, if I do something, you know, faux pas or something stupid, just like, hey, that's not how we roll. Which I can't imagine that's going to be an issue, but you never know. You never know with people.
Does anyone have a problem with me standing up and gesticulating as a role play?
No. Nope. No, I love it.
Good, because we don't do that in my current group, and I miss it.
No, do your thing.
I love it, but I don't do it in our current group, not because of the group or anything like that, because where I'm sitting on a couch with a table, and if I try to do this, I'm going to hit my knees on the table, and it's going to be painful.
Yeah, well, and once I get the Omnis, that should be better supported. I mean, mm-hmm. you stand up right now, the mic's probably just going to lose you mostly, but...
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling I've been fading in and out because I don't have the stand stuck on my chair.
Yeah, so it's all good, though. All right.
Just fuck them.
Yeah. As long as, I mean, the only...
That's what we should call this, the AP. Fear the fuck them. We love you.
You know, I mean, obviously, in character, we're going to have disagreements. Out of character, we'll probably have disagreements or points of view that, you know, just want to make sure that if we do have a challenge out of character, you know, that we deal with it in character. Well, you know, whatever. As long as, you know, we're, you know, someone's not deliberately constantly contrary just for the sake of being contrary. Because I think that's
I agree.
It's tiresome.
I enjoy inter-player tension inter-character tension and inter-character infighting. I really enjoy that, as long as it actually comes from somewhere and just doesn't, you know, force.
It's not arbitrary.
Yeah, and then it goes somewhere. It like gets resolved, or, you know, there's a sort of
first Guys of Glass game I ever played, which was my first game, Chad and my character got into a fist fight.
Wow.
And it was based on one of the stories we told in the last episode, where my character went through all this trouble to save someone. His character walks up, grabs the arrow, twists it, and kills the character.
Yeah, what's the major artery in the leg? Is that the
femoral?
Femoral artery. I can never remember if it's the femoral artery or the carotid artery.
Femoral femur. Femoral femur.
Oh, because okay.
We couldn't deal with the situation because
Chad
had to leave.
You twisted the arrow. And what it did was it actually hit the femoral artery, and
you bled out.
You bled out. Yeah,
real quick.
We couldn't deal with the situation then, but when we got to the next town where we're hiding, we get in a fist fight, which caused all the noise that pretty much led to the whole party getting captured.
Yeah, and we'll deal with this more in the group template. But I think that a cohesive reason for us to be together and have some semblance of camaraderie, even if we are not friendly or intimate, just that we're together for a reason that makes sense, and we have motivations and desires to stay together, at least initially.
Yeah. I like the idea of, you know, saying, how is Chad's character connected to Brodor's character in a positive way? Okay, next, what is a tension between them?
Right.
Sort of thing.
You know what could be interesting, just throwing this out there as an idea, if we're dealing with like a farm town that has gone back to the way things were, at that point you crank out kids so they can work the farm, we could all be related, as in all be brothers.
It's true.
That don't want to work the farm.
Right, brothers or at least cousins or...
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, yeah, a brother, uncle or...
Yeah. Break town.
Or if somebody wants to play the My Family's Dead, they were raised by this family.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's good too.
Okay. Things I shouldn't be laughing at. So, group template.
That's a thing.
Let's start with a really high concept here. Concept for real general concept idea before we actually get to the questions on the group template is there was an idea I was rolling around. Now, I'm not dead set on this. I've not written a plot for this or something like this, but I was just thinking about things that would do a good job of sort of accommodating all of the things that you guys have talked about. How would you feel about operating a wooden boat that goes up and down the Mississippi, that you have a hometown that you run supplies out of and you trade with and possibly explore and get yourselves in all kinds of shenanigans farther up or down the Mississippi?
A little Huck Finnish.
Yes, yeah. Actually, Huck Finn minus the racism was kind of...
minus racism, but plus violence.
Yeah. I have a problem with it. I just got through reading a book called Wicked River, which was, it's about that entire thing. It's a history book. It's about, you know.
Well, you're dead.
Yeah.
Read a whole book before the game. Yeah. That dude's dead.
I don't remember who it was. It was on someone you do where somebody's trying to do a summary of Huck Finn. And they're like, you know, Huck travels up and down the river with his black friend, whose last name is Joe.
So, I very much like when we go out to dinner.
I'm sorry, it's Jim, not Joe.
Very much like when we go out to dinner. I'm really, really easy. I don't know. I've spent so much time on that side of the GM screen, if you will, fighting with players to get them to agree to certain concepts or to try things, you know, out of their comfort zone. I'll fucking play anything.
I actually really like it as long as we get time actually in the town as well.
Yeah.
So, like, do we go through the winter, or does the boat stay docked in the winter and we spend time in the town in the winter?
Right. And what about locks and river depth and, you know, those sorts of challenges?
I got a great book for you to read. It's called Wicked River. It's about all that shit.
I
don't want to get killed.
If we do this, I'm going to have to, number one, do a little bit of quick reading on...
I got a great book for you. It's called Wicked River. It's about this exact shit.
Quick reading on what river travel's like, but secondly, beg some forbearance because it's not going to be perfect, right? I'm not a longshoreman.
Actually my only concern. It's not even a legitimate, real concern. I read this goddamn book. And you're going to get something wrong, and I'm going to have to be like...
Now, see, counterpoint, you will be a great resource. You'd be like, hey, by the way, Dan, in Wicked River, they talked about this, and so it would actually be handled in this fashion, or this other idea makes more sense. I think it's a resource.
And for two games, I'll be absolutely invincible.
Right? Boom.
I really like the setup idea because it gives you a chance to see, go in and out of other towns, run into other things. I like the idea of that it's not that we're just nomads going up and down the river. We have a hometown and we get our supplies from the hometown that we then go to trade. As long as we have that hometown back there and have those NPCs and actually get back to them, that it's not, because I've seen before games like the D&D style game where you have a hometown, but now you're off to travel and the whole game is the travel.
Well,
I want the NPCs to make a difference.
Yeah. Right? Well, and part of the idea I had also, if we go with this, is there are going to be NPCs with you as part of the boat crew. This is not like a 3-man canoe. You know, we are talking a fairly large raft or maybe some kind of a wooden flat boat. So we are talking about something that is sizable enough that you guys, in addition to the cargo, you have a handful of people with you. This is not something that you guys do by yourselves. And that's in addition to having a hometown and possibly a destination town where, you know, you guys have ties in both. But for that sense of family, there is always going to be a consistent group of NPCs that are with you that round out the skills you don't have or just help you man this thing. Because once again, it's not like, I wasn't thinking like you guys are like blockade runners where somebody hands you a note and once again, three of you hop in a canoe and try to slip down the Mississippi.
Do you have in mind that this is a boat that's been built after or something that's been retrofitted?
Well, you know, something I was thinking about is to give the party a goal is you guys have something that was built either, well, after from either wholly new parts or from salvage parts. But since you've traveled the river, you know somewhere there's a little hidden cove where there's a larger, possibly powered ship that if you want, you're going to have to save up the funds and do the work to rehab. That there may be an actual like steamship or something like that that you could put together, but it's going to be a project to get the engines working again.
I have a request for that boat because I like the concept of it. An old casino. I'm thinking like the River Queen where it actually went out on the river, not like the Harrah's where it's
been. Yeah, not the boat in the moat.
No, but like one of those there, because there are a couple. Was it the Admiral?
Oh, the Admiral broke its moorings every 20 minutes. If you ever wanted to find the Admiral, all you had to do was find the next major highway overpass or bridge.
Yeah.
And that's where it was.
But that's what I mean when I say a former casino boat is one of the ones that actually would go out on the river for it. Because I just like that idea of that's what it used to be, but all the casino stuff has been ripped out to make it a usable ship.
Are we the only ones doing this kind of trade on the river, or is there a community of people plying this trade?
There is a community. It's not going to be huge simply because trade over that distance in general is not huge, but it's not as if you are going to be the only group doing this.
Are there river pirates? Because let me tell you, there used to be river pirates.
Yes. And
there should be if there's not.
Yeah. Yes, there will be people, which is another reason why, once again, you don't want three, or if we get Eric or another person or whatever, you don't want 3 to 5 of you on this boat.
Right.
Because it's, once again, you're not people in a little canoe hiding a slip of paper. You've got stuff worth stealing. And if you don't get it to its destination, turn it over for a profit, that's a loss.
Yep.
And all kinds of things. Bad weather could hit you. Hitting a sandbar. Yeah, a tree hitting the hull of the ship. There's people that are bandits, even somebody who's just got a psychological issue sitting on the shoreline with a Molotov cocktail.
And there's no Army Corps of Engineers anymore. So the idea of I'm going to do this river and I know that there's three bends and, you know, two branches. Well, that's what it was last fall, but it's not controlled anymore. And so now it snakes all over the place.
Yeah. And if it's in a flood stage or in a dry stage or what, I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff that can figure into this. So how do you guys feel about that for a group concept? Do you like that? Would you rather do something more like Farm Town?
I like it.
I like it.
Do you want to exist in the slums around St. Louis? I mean, there's all kinds of other options.
I want to go into St. Louis.
No, I like
that's the other reason I like it is because all of these places we can visit Cape Girardeau. We can visit.
We're talking
St.
about
Louis.
The Mississippi, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I mean, nothing stops you from hitting the Illinois, the Missouri, the Merrimack, whatever you want to.
Well, and the actual it fulfills both of my desires to have a sense of community, both in on the vessel and in the town, but B, my desire to have exposure and layers and learn and see the world, and three, to build our legend to be on the radio.
Excellent. Yes.
So, because you're not that far off the rivers. If or not you guys, but I mean, the Arcadia Valley is not that far off the rivers. So, Okay, so let's go down the group template real quick. This is probably going to be pretty easy as we've done so much work already. Does the Game Master need our group to be something in particular for the plot I have in mind? And the answer is no, because I was going to center it around whatever you guys wanted to play. I didn't have a plot idea in mind when I came here. In brief, what will our group be when the game starts? And the answer is the crew.
Traitors, not traitors.
Yes, yeah. Of a river.
River traitors.
Trading.
And I could work my concept into this, too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, your concept worked great with it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to see more of St. Louis, that could be... okay, now we are getting into more meaningful group template things. When and how did the characters first meet? I'm assuming you guys... I mean, you talked about being from the same town.
Well, I have a full character concept, so I don't know if anybody else has that much...
Okay, we can pause here. Does anyone have a character concept?
Yes.
Other than Chad. Other than Chad.
I have ideas and snippets, but not a full concept.
All right, Chad, why don't you present your concept, and we'll see if people are okay with kind of building
it. And the audience will judge you.
Oh, they do. I've been doing this for a long time. I thrive on their judgment. It's my kink. My concept is, it actually has two parts to it. One is the core concept, and one is like an optional piece that can be plugged into it if it helps Dan or you guys. So he's a bookseller. I mean, it's plain and simple. The idea was, before we came up with this river thing, is he's a traveling bookseller. And he has a circuit that he does. He goes from town to town to town. And his thing is that he goes into a town and he teaches a couple of people how to read. Especially people who are interested in teaching other people how to read. And so
he's creating his own market.
Yeah, he gives away, he teaches them how to read. He gives them a couple of books for free or for like super cheap. And he also, while he's in the town, he looks for books that he can, you know, put into a supply. And then he encourages them to teach other people how to read. And so he goes from he goes from town to town doing this. And when he gets back to that town, if everything's gone well, multiple people now, at least in some way, know how to read because they've been teaching each other. Now he can sell his books, and then that's how he makes his money. And he goes from town to town, basically spreading literacy for profit.
You hook people on the written word.
That's right.
The first book is free.
Oh, that's right.
You're a villain.
Yep. I was also thinking that one of the towns that he kind of operates out of, he maybe co-owns a printing press and is like, maybe he's not writing books, but he's getting other people to write. You know, that's the next layer, is like, oh, well, you like that book. Have you thought about writing a book? And he gets them to write it. And then he, you know, they can pay him to publish his book, which you're totally not supposed to do if you're a writer. Money goes the other way. But he gets them to pay him to publish a book, and then he prints it for him and gives it out, and he sells it on his way. And so that's the concept, right? And he goes from town to town. He knows people. People like him. And he easily gets involved in things. You know, he can easily join things. I can make him of a level of success to where he doesn't, you know, he's like, okay, I know we got to save the town, but I got to go. I got to sell three more books, guys. Otherwise, I'm not going to eat. You know, no, it's like that can be ignored. So that's the core concept.
So he's sociable, mm-hmm. intellectual.
Mm-hmm.
Is he involved in group politics or village politics? Or
so, he can't not be.
Yeah. So that's the other aspect of it.
Ideas are a dangerous thing.
Yeah. He also, because he could go into a town and he could be the only truly literate and intellectual person in the town. And he can deliver mail for people. He can deliver mail and read the letter for you for a fee. He can take a dictation. He can also write contracts between people.
Which makes you a lawyer.
Which makes me a lawyer.
By that level of technology in society, yep. That makes you a lawyer.
Because then I also interpret the contracts, notary public sort of thing. It's like he puts his seal, so he has a reputation that he needs to maintain to be on. Oh, well, this contract was signed by so-and-so. So once he comes into town, you know, he'll be the final say on whether this is true or not. And he's not like a judge or anything, but more of a, and he's not going to defend somebody. It's like, well, he stole two horses from me. It's more like disputes type right. stuff. And so, yeah, he's plugged into the politics and the goings on, and he also delivers news and that sort of thing. He's sort of a charisma guy, and he is a talker, and he has a high reputation, and he really leans on that. He's also intellectual, smart, that sort of thing. Here's the optional sort of module that can be plugged into him, too, is that there are powers in this world. There are political big powers that dominate over everything, sometimes in unseen ways. And he can be an agent for one of those powers. Basically, they send him into the field. He does every single thing I just described to you. And he also writes reports and puts them in drops and reports back what's going on. And sometimes he'll get missions, say, okay, change your route to go here, and I want you to do this.
So that actually is one of my questions then, in terms of the actual campaign setting, or the what are the levels? Because I was thinking base, post-apocalyptic, small communities of people banding together to eke out survival, right? I was not thinking in terms of there are large governmental bodies that have greater power and wealth and technology, etc.
Generally, there aren't. Okay. Skies of Glass is something that, when we described this in the design series back in the Dark Ages of our show, we described it as a game that is built around micro settings. That there's a reason why Wayne can ask me what happened in Metropolis, Illinois, which is a location. It's really not all that far from here. I simply don't know, because those communities, they end up quite isolated. Now, there are larger governing bodies that exert influence over regions. We might, let's call them city states, perhaps as much as maybe the area of a full state or some portion of a state. State here in the U.S. sense of the word. But is there somebody that like rules the country?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is no. Yeah. And so for the most part, the people that you're going to be interacting with, they might be existing at the level of a community with a few dozen, a few hundred. Maybe if it's a big one, we'll get into four figures. But you're also going to run into a lot of people where they live by themselves with their family on a farm. Now, once again, are there still surviving major cities? Yes. Not many of them. St. Louis is one of them. Now, St. Louis has lost population, and it has its issues. But they are organized enough that they can exert regional control over most of the surrounding area. Now, there are areas they don't control. They don't have a good grip on anything east of the Mississippi. They have a few observation posts and such. They don't have a good grip on it. And they don't have a good grip the farther out west you get from them, because it's just too large of an area with not enough in there and too many is.
Yep. Okay.
And so it's just not worth. The way they see it is the area they're most interested in is basically kind of put a marker on St. Louis and draw sort of a semicircle from kind of the northern tip of Missouri down to about the boot heel of Missouri. And that's really what they're after, is the river valleys, the mining towns that are just south of here, the ore, the major agricultural areas, this water sources. That's the big thing they're after.
The classic resources you would expect.
Yes. They are after things like the coal mines, the lead mines, the iron mines, the major farms, things like that. But as you just start to get out into the middle of the state and such, or way off to the north or south, they can't exert their control.
Yeah. Okay. There is a city in, I think it was Florida, that is basically at the, it didn't get nuked, and they're at that level of technology still. And but they think that all that technology should be, they should be the ones controlling it. Was that Jacksonville?
Yeah, so what happened is in the middle of the war, there was an anti-missile defense that kind of worked, which is actually what spared St. Louis. But St. Louis, nobody got control of the city fast enough, and so it kind of fell into some messes and then had to dig itself out and became a bit dystopian in the process. a city where that did not happen, the nukes didn't hit, and it actually kept itself together, was the Naval Air Station at Jacksonville. Because what happened was the military forces there pretty quickly took control of Jacksonville itself and put it under martial law. They drew what technological and military resources they considered worthwhile and basically took a fortress mentality of the area, that people don't get in, people don't get out. And over the years since, they have actually built a wall around the area. And at this point, you guys would probably not know a huge amount about what's going on in there, except for the fact that they're doing well, but they are mired in inaction. They simply aren't doing anything involving the outside world, with the exception of they do maintain a trading post in the town of Waycross, Georgia. And what they do at Waycross is the major resources that they need that they cannot get on their own, they trade for there. So, for example, they might say, okay, we need this many tons of lumber. You bring that to us, we're willing to talk about things like antibiotics, or, you know, we might even give you something like fully well-bred GCs, complete with the papers on them. So they will give things that only they are capable of making in return for the raw materials that they are not capable of making. But so, you know, they exist, but what you know about what goes on beyond that wall is just a ton of speculation.
Gotcha.
But so, if you've ever been to that area in character, you've seen things. You've seen that their technology is there and does still work. You've seen fighters. You've seen
helicopters. It's not a great secret.
Yeah, it's not a big secret.
Inaccessible.
Yeah, it's just, you just can't get in there. You know, you've probably seen the defensive frontier, you know, which has guys in armor patrolling it and automated cannons and such. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's there.
So what I've got so far for a character concept is he grew up on a farm. He realized he wanted to do anything but farming. And so he signed up early on to go, you know, with the boat. And that's where he found his passion. This is a guy that is, he loves trading. There's nothing that he enjoys more than going in and coming out with a good deal. And that's where his passion really lies, is with the trade process. And looking for, he's the kind of guy that has notes on every town up and down the river based on what they, you know, what are their supplies. And he goes into a town and he knows, okay, our next stop, they never have lumber. This town has lumber. And things like that. So he's, you know, trying to, he keeps track of what's going on. He's like, the next town, they're willing to give this for what I've got, but the town after will give me that. So I'm not even going to show them that we have this on board right now. That's the kind of, that's kind of what I have in mind for the character.
I dig it.
Now, would you have some sort of skill set in terms of actually managing the vessel's crew and sort of rivermanship, if you will?
Sounds like Wayne's more of a
master than the
merchant
commander.
Man.
Yeah. Merchant's what I had in mind for. Okay. I mean, in this world, you're going to have some skills outside of your job anyway, but that's where his passion really lied, and that's what he focused on. Definitely the merchant is what I have in mind for him.
Okay.
All right. So then I was thinking of someone that grew up around the river and has a real passion for the river itself, in terms of, you know, because we don't really have other forms of locomotion and trade. So there is a good, honest livelihood to be made working the riverboat, whether we're transporting goods or we're transporting people or we're transporting some weird guy who reads books. But just basically, you know, I love the town. I love the community. It's where I grew up, but a sort of raised on the river. Mm-hmm. And so boating, swimming, you know, being, right, you know, sort of the navigation of it all, being able to read the river, but mostly just the liberation of it. Right. Because most people are going to be trapped in those small cloisters and they're not going to get out. And just the ability to not necessarily be terribly concerned about meeting other people or seeing other towns, but having a great appreciation for the natural beauty of the river and the landscape and being able to actually, I don't know, have some understanding of, oh, we want to avoid the sandbar, or oh God, there's pirates coming. Where's the best place to to actually run the ship aground and run the fuck away? So something, something
awesome.
Something basic, something simple, you know.
So Chad, how, if we go with the boat idea, what do you do as a member of the crew? Or the operation as a whole, I guess I could say.
We said that we wanted to be based out of a town.
Yes.
Right. So that town can be where his home is too. I mean, he didn't spring from the earth and lives on, you know, sleeps in his armor and falls asleep on the road.
Well, there goes every great character I've ever seen.
Right. So, I mean, he has to have a place to lay his head. So, I mean, obviously it could be in that town. I have this idea that he has a fiance and she's the sort of school marm of the town, and she lives in that town. But that has nothing to do with the boat. The boat thing, though, I mean, it could be one of a number of things. It depends on how big the boat is. You might need somebody to do finances, but that sounds more like your area, Wayne.
Well, going with the whole thing, if you guys do operate in and around the St. Louis area, something that might be helpful is just keep going with what you've got. The houses of St. Louis don't get along with each other.
Yeah.
Having somebody,
like guilt.
Yeah. Having somebody who knows how to navigate those politics, having somebody who can write the official paperwork, there actually is value in simply having an Abe Lincoln style attorney on the ship. So somebody who's maybe sort of a mix of an oddities dealer who just prefers books, but also on top of that, keeps the books, keeps the paperwork, deals with the transit papers and the manifests and things like that.
A roving judiciary.
Yeah. Every town that you go into is going to have different ideas of what laws are, permits, taxes, tariffs. The closer you get to St. Louis, the more bullshit bureaucracy that these, you know, nickel and dime princes are going to try to.
Sure.
And he's basically your ship's lawyer. He navigates those for you.
Yes. And if you guys do things like find an operational machine gun, you're going to need to know who you can sell it to and who you can't. If you even have simple cargo like iron ingots, knowing who you're allowed to sell that to and who you're not.
Yeah,
because of the politics of resource control is, I think that's a place you could fit in. Okay, so we'll see what Eric wants to be, but then I'll round out with NPCs, things like the ship's actual helmsman, the animal handler, the you'll probably have a hired gun or two. And I say animal handler because, Wayne, you wanted the GCs, if I'm not mistaken. In river travel, when the currents ain't going your way, one of the common ways of moving the boat is you lash it to horses or mules on land.
Or men
who walk it.
Yeah.
And you use the rudder to try and keep depth, but you have them tow it. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. I know that's done in canals. But I believe it's also done on the river.
You should read Wicked River. It has all that information.
I'll tell you nothing else.
Apparently, I should read Wicked River.
Right, yeah.
So
you'll be invincible for two games.
So how did the characters first meet? Okay, so let's put you guys, you are all from...
let me ask you real quick. Do you guys want me to do that optional, I'm an agent, plug-in part?
How about you don't tell us? I mean, seriously. Yeah, I'm not trying to dodge the
question for you. Do you even know who you work for? Or do you just know that you drop things off and there's money waiting for you?
Yes.
Hmm.
I kind of like that idea if you're going with, because you have a habit of playing the outsider character. And this isn't necessarily an outsider, but that aspect does make it more of an outsider. But if you don't know who you're, who's paying you, that kind of fixes that. I like the idea of you being loyal to the town that you came from, and that this is, that is your home as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
Okay. So when and how did the characters meet? You guys want to all operate out of a farming community from a little...
I'm Brodor's father.
Well, do you want to do farming? Do you want to, because if you guys do ore operations or any kind of like a mining area, even surface mining, there's tons of that just south of St. Louis.
Do you have a preference?
No, it just, it only make a difference with what we have on the boat to start with.
Yeah. See, and I liked the idea of your characters like, look, anything but this, right?
Yep.
You know, I just happen to be, I like the idea of lucking into, I wasn't a miner or a farmer because the people who raised me, whether biological or not, they just happened to be people who were river people, and boating is what they did. And so I sort of inherited the occupation.
Yeah, that concept of anything but works just as well if it's a mine as it is if it's a farm.
Ryan, you actually come from that area. Can you pick me something that's right along the Mississippi that either is or has a history of minerals? Just, I know there's many of them to pick from.
Mineral County?
Well, I mean, there's a reason.
Iron Mountain?
Yeah, Ironton.
Ironton.
Steelville. What's the lead one?
I was say, are you looking north or south?
South.
It's always Hillsboro.
Yeah.
There's a lead smelter there, but there's not a mine. Yeah, there's really no mining in that area. No farm. There is farming, but.
I mean, yeah, there's so a that wouldn't ton work. Of mining I was all thinking, up and down the rivers.
Yeah. Does Bonterra have any mining
pull up
here?
A map? Yeah. Yeah, pull up the Googles.
The Google.
And that's something we did a lot with.
When you have my permission, take out a cell phone, look up and down, look up and down the Mississippi River, pick me a town that's along the Mississippi River and just has some obvious export resource. Doesn't have to be minerals. It could be agricultural. It could be whatever.
What do you think of my character showing promise, intellect as a young man, and then instead of getting sent to a farm or a mine, he got sent to St. Louis to get educated.
Then you've got a real interesting thing you're ducking because they would want to mask you. To explain the way St. Louis operates, knowledge is very, very important to them. And they have this, it's not quite a caste system, but they have the sense that everyone has a place to hold. And one of the groups of people they guard most jealously are those that are highly educated. They actually strip them of their identity, put a mask on them, and make them basically permanent servants of one of the houses. And that house would very jealously guard you. So it's possible one of the reasons you took the river was to avoid masking.
How about this? I got sent to St. Louis for that reason, got educated, all that sort of stuff, masked, all that. And I didn't want that. That was not part of anything that I wanted. But I couldn't, you can't get out. You can't escape it. But I was approached by someone representing someone, and they did not tell me who they represented. And they said, okay, we can free you and you can travel freely without your mask. It's just, you have to do this for us. And anything we tell you to do, Chad, you have to do.
Okay, I'm going to add another layer here.
I have an interesting idea looking through some of these. For the town, looking at a couple of them, there's Roachport, there's Herman, there's a couple of wineries.
Oh!
And that gives us both the farming aspect, but not... We're making alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, a vineyard is... That's a lot of fun. I mean,
so
both literally and in the game.
Yeah.
So you come from
Herman,
the port, the river, it's the river side.
Actually, I think Herman is
Herman one or two N's?
Two N's.
So I thought it was the German spelling.
Because it's on the Missouri River, not the Mississippi, but the Missouri hits the Mississippi. Yeah. Okay. I was looking at the other one was Roach, also is a winery, Roachport. Which river is it on?
I was going to say, I thought Herman was west, but...
Yeah, Herman's west.
Yeah, you can still hit that.
Because this one has access to Katy Trail.
Herman does?
No,
Rocheport.
Yeah, another little town in wine country. But I love that idea, though, of a wine...
Mm-hmm.
So even if we are a little bit west at Herman, we can take the Missouri to the Mississippi to go up and down.
And it doesn't have to be, like, all wine, too. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it's agricultural land. Honey, wine, corn, soybeans.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that come from that area.
Fruits of the sea.
What about bicycles? In terms of that has to be a desirable form of locomotion.
You ever tried to bike around this area?
Well, right, but I mean, like in the urban areas and the cities and things, and you know, you've got the trails, you've got off road biking. Yeah, are there? I mean, what's the quality of the roads? I mean, what terrible states of disrepair are they in?
You need rubber for the wheels. So where do you get the rubber from?
Right,
because it's a petroleum product. Or if natural rubber is a tropical plant.
Yeah, right? So it depends where you're getting it from.
The grease, because we're talking 125 years. I mean, the rubber, you can make a bicycle, but that would be an interesting story.
Actually, tires are...
Yeah, tires would be the hard one. And then grease chain, some of the... I mean, there's a lot of rust going on.
Right.
I think it's doable. You could.
Are you thinking about this for a character concept?
No. I was just curious as, you know, side business.
That and the roads are a
disaster. Right.
If they exist.
Okay. Are the characters located in the same place? Yes. So the answer is yes. Let's put a dash here and put Herman.
I'm excited about the idea of it coming from wine country.
Yeah.
And like I said, it is agricultural, so there's all these other things you can grow. And
mm-hmm. Chad, what I was going to throw at you to add to your character background. Okay, so you get taken in. You're about to be, you're educated kid, about to be masked. And anonymous party comes along because St. Louis does have its laws.
Yeah.
And... one of the things that you're allowed to do is there is a top house that has nothing of its own, but provides order to the other houses. And one of the things that they're known to do to simply shut people up and to keep conflict limited is to use the pits to basically throw people into Thunderdome.
Right.
Somebody comes along and says, you know what? I'll make you do. You're an intelligent guy. You're an educated guy. You do what we want, and we will hire a pit fighter to champion you to get you out of here. And we will play the politics of the houses, because if you're this intelligent, houses B through whatever are not going to want house A having you.
Right.
And so we'll get them to back your play in the court so that you get the pit fight. This guy champions on your behalf because a masked one is not worth risking in the pits.
Right.
For anybody. And he's going to win your freedom, and then you work for us. What the pit fighter gets out of this is he wants out of the pit because the lifespan's too short. And so I might add him in as one of the heavies for your boat crew.
Yeah. Eric could potentially even play him.
Yeah. I'll give Eric that option. If he doesn't want to, I'll NPC him.
Yeah.
But the guy that won your freedom, now maybe he's in the know. I don't know. Yeah. I'll just deal with that. Maybe.
Sure.
Maybe he does, or maybe he does not know who hired him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he knows and isn't telling you, or maybe he doesn't know and is unable to tell you.
Yeah.
But he wanted out too because the lifespan is so short there that.
That works.
Because, those fights are to the death, and you can only do that so many times before your number comes up.
Okay. So. And they're rare outside of St. Louis, but not unheard of. So, like, when he goes walking into a town, people aren't going to go running and screaming.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to actually cut him.
Oh.
Okay. If that's what you're...
Yeah.
I haven't decided.
There's, like, these sort of heavy industrial cybernetics that they do in St. Louis for the pit fighters.
Drastically reduce your life expectancy out of the pit.
Mm-hmm.
But help you in the pit.
Yeah. And you're going to die soon anyway.
Yeah. And you're not going to live that long anyway. So it's this thing of kind of like, yeah, we'll see. I don't know what I'm going to do with that. Okay. What major events have you guys shared in your past? Is there anything that you guys want to throw in there that kind of is a shared memory?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what brought you all together?
Are we all about the same age? Are we different ages?
What's everyone thinking for age? Chad? You have the most developed character.
Yeah. Anywhere between 25 and 35.
I was thinking 24. So that's about...
Okay.
Yeah. I was thinking younger than that. I was thinking late teens, early 20s.
Yeah, I go. Yeah.
So what I have in mind is I've been on the boat long enough to have learned the routes and things.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like he was anything but farming.
Mm-hmm.
And then he found his passion. And he's been doing it for a little while.
Okay. So I mean, we could all be about the same age.
Yeah, so that's why I was thinking like mid or early 20s. He probably jumped on the boat at 17.
Mm-hmm. So how old are you thinking?
I was thinking late teens, early 20s, like, I don't know. I was thinking conceptually like apprentice to the helmsman.
What if?
You know, been on the ship, pretty much grown up on the water.
What if your shared background is you guys originally latched onto or knew a guy who owned, operated a boat, had his own operation. Something bad happens. Wreck, storm, pirates.
Syphilis.
Gets drunk and falls overboard. Whatever it is. Something bad happens.
A lot of that's in Wicked River, too.
I can imagine. But this guy dies, and his operation ends. But you guys decide, you know what? We like each other. We like this lifestyle. We're good at this lifestyle. We've got some money. Let's go get our own boat and keep doing this.
Yeah.
And that gives you a shared NPC. This is a guy who was a friend, father figure, whatever you needed him to be. This was the guy who was your whistler of the river.
Mm-hmm.
This was a guy who, you know, took care of you guys, taught you guys the role. Hell, he may actually be your father.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's your call. But there was an individual. And so that's the shared event is you guys one by one found your way into his crew, got to know each other. Something happens, and then you just continue that operation.
So here's a question. For what we're trading, are we doing this for personal profit or for the town? So basically, are we buying or trading things from the town? And then, or
is the town a commune?
Well, right. Does the town own the vessel?
Right.
Or if this NPC was my father, did he own the vessel? Did I inherit the vessel? Did the vessel sink in his death and we got our own? Or
and is that on a loan or is that
right?
And by loan, I mean, like you guys owe on it.
Yeah.
Or is that, do you guys own it? These are all good questions.
Yeah, cause I'm fine with all of them. I mean, I like the idea of this is something the town does for what it needs.
I say the boat sunk.
Mm-hmm.
We decided to buy a new boat. We had to take out a loan.
Right.
And that creates an NPC we are into because there's no banks.
Right. So someone in the town paid for, or the collective that is the town paid for to build the new ship or the new boat. And now we decided, yes, we're going to buy the boat and we are doing these jobs, at least initially, to pay off.
Yeah.
This person who we're in debt to, or or the town council or whatever.
Yeah, I like the idea that the town needed the resources. So until we pay it off, we basically are paying the town and making our own profit. But a good chunk of the money goes back to the town.
Right. Mm-hmm. So but the question is, would the town ever realistically let the resource of the boat go? Would they ever really finalize the sale? Would they ever let us leave with it?
I love that being a story point.
Yeah. That's a great question.
As far as we're concerned, we're going to buy the boat, and then when we're done, just get all the profit.
And so,
far as the town's concerned,
I have a love-hate relationship with the river, right? So because it killed the man who raised me, the man that I called my father, right? But then I want to leave, but I'm resentful because I can't leave, and he never made enough money to pay off the boat, and now he dies. We have a new boat, and basically, essentially, I'm back to my father's square one.
Yeah. I dig it.
That fucker. Yeah. I like the idea that he wasn't my biological father, but that he raised me,
right,
that took me in, and...
Mm-hmm.
Because I can imagine that illegitimacy has got to be a thing, right?
Oh, no, there's birth control everywhere.
Oh, yeah. And everyone's faithful to their spouse, especially people that travel a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you imagine he just shows up at port, some woman tells him this is your kid, now get on get.
Yeah. Chad, I don't know about all the other characters. My character can read.
Okay.
Because just by the nature of what I have in mind for him,
sure.
He has notebooks of things where he takes notes and he makes the deals and then brings you in to help with the contracts. And so at very least, he is definitely a reader.
Yeah.
Okay. So, how did the boat sink? Let's wrap. Listen, storm, failure on your guys' part, failure on the captain's part. Attack by someone.
When does my character get inserted into the story? I'm imagining that we're all about the same age. Mm-hmm. We were childhood friends together, and then I got taken.
Plucked, right.
Yeah, I got plucked, and then I got plucked at like 9 or 10, and they educated me and did all that stuff, and then they let me go at like 18, 19. So I've been back a couple of years, but I was not involved in, you know, that the boat sinking or any of that. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I like it. And then that way, one, you come back and hey, here's the new cruelty. This is the situation we're in.
Yeah.
We are going to get this new boat. What do you think? You can eke out a livelihood. But then also you don't lose any momentum or inventory with your particular character in terms of, so you come back, right? And we now have new ship, old ship sank, new ship is here, new character is in town. He's back. Oh my God. It's so great to see you.
Right.
Hey, what do you think about helping us on this endeavor?
And then I'm like, you know, wait, let me see that contract.
Right.
And I'm like, you signed this?
Well, I can't read. Right?
Yeah, this is like a big X.
I figure my literacy is quite limited, if at all.
Yeah.
Right?
I like that idea of you signed what? And I'm like,
I love the idea that all the money stuff is just on you for the boat.
Right.
And you don't know anything about any of it.
Right. Yeah.
Any of the money aspect.
Yeah.
And then
indentured servitude. It's fun.
Yeah. And then we're like, you know, I come back and you're already helping him, and I come back and I'm like, I'm not going to leave you hanging. And then I pitch in to help.
Right. Well, and it's a great opportunity for you to do whatever it is that you need to do in terms of fulfilling your business and fulfilling your obligations to whoever it is. Right.
Do you want to have been in town a year or so before you go back out, because you were talking about a fiance?
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah, I like the idea of, you know, maybe I came back at like 18-ish and we're all like 20-ish now.
Yeah, early 20s. Yeah. Does that work? Or do you guys, I mean, we could do older. It doesn't matter to me.
That works for me.
Yeah, I like that around then.
Yeah.
I said I've been doing this for at least 3 years is what I have in mind.
Yeah.
I see you guys as like really comfortable in the water, and my character is like not very good on the water. You know, he's not like seasick all the time.
Which is great, because I see my character as not being comfortable around learned people and not being comfortable around large groups of people. And
do I still have my mask? Like not on, but.
Yeah, I don't think they would, because they're all personalized. Like each of the masks looks different. That is your personality.
Mm-hmm.
So your mask would be unique to you. They put it on and, you better be, it's about the same as, claiming to be like Secret Service or something.
Right.
You can land yourself in some hot shit doing that, but
so
I don't think they would have taken it. I could also see you could have easily absconded with it.
I could also see like, you know, the whole deal and it happened and the fight happened and then we are completely legal to walk out the door. And one or two of the houses is like, if he doesn't find himself dead, somebody's just going to grab him and then they'll have him and we won't. And so I could see like he had to sneak out in the middle of the night so nobody would like kill him.
Yeah, you could still have the full get up with the robes that identify the house and then the mask that identifies you, but simply not, like I said, wearing them is going to be a huge risk.
You guys know I got taken. And when I came back, I told you the story. You know, I told you it's like, here's my mask. Here's what they wanted. Here's why I didn't want to do it. You know, here's why this guy is with me. But I'm not telling you about the working for them part.
All right.
Or I'm working for somebody part.
So. So back to the boat. How did it sink? Act of violence, accident, incompetence.
I think incompetence. I mean, I think that something, you know, so it doesn't have to be this big, dramatic, cliched thing where we were set upon by river pirates. And,
that's just what we tell
them. You know, blah, 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 blah. Well, yeah, there's, I mean, that could be, right? But just the idea that, you know, somebody just made a dumb mistake and it got somebody killed.
Mm-hmm. You know how they say don't smoke in the engine room?
Right. Well, you know, and imagine we have to be very cautious at night, and that's when you're going to make, you know, you're going to be operating by starlight, and we probably don't want to have a lot of, you know, torchlight or what have you in the evening.
What's the number one killer of man on the water? It's not water.
It's light.
It's fire.
Right.
If you go out on a boat, you are far more likely to die by being burned to death than by being drowned.
Do you know the largest nautical accident in United States history happened on the Mississippi River?
No.
Yes. And it was a fire.
That wicked river. Yeah. I knew that.
Yep.
So,
I kind of like the idea of, this all happened in a flood area at the time, and trying to deal with the fire, the boat runs up on something that's underwater.
Yeah. Maybe we're all, it was a issue that you guys could have easily dealt with and you're handling it, but then somebody threw a cigarette the wrong way or a lantern fell and it just escalated from there.
This blazing boat run aground on the shores of, a high water river. Yeah.
We lost all that good cargo.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real loss.
Yeah.
Sure, your father figure died, but we lost all that cargo. You can find a new father figure.
Yeah, that's right.
Is there enough moral agreement among the characters to keep them from abhorring each other? Sounds like yes.
Yeah.
I eat babies daily.
Delicious. You get them from Alex Jones. They come wrapped in gold foil.
Yeah, they're great.
The question is, what kind of wine do you drink with that?
Yeah. Oh, well, only Herman wine, of course.
Well, let's see. Human flesh is similar to pork.
Long pig.
Pork you usually do with a blush, right? So
well, it is post-apocalypse. You take what you can get.
Yeah. Really, so. I don't know. So, all right.
I'm not eating people unless I have to.
So, okay, is there any potential character conflict, or is there any potential conflict between character personalities, goals, or ethics that can become so great the plot will fizzle out or players will be excluded? I think the only one was Chad's outside ties, which we took care of by him not knowing either.
And my character, I mean, he has morals and views. I mean, one day they may ask him to do something that he doesn't want to do.
And that becomes a plot. All right. So the answer there sounds like no. Okay. So here's what, and we can develop this here as we go. What plot elements are in the group's history the game master can use in his or her plot? So I'm going to put here the boat sinking.
Yep.
There might be new information to find out about that.
The
Chad's spine.
Yep.
Chad's ties to St. Louis.
The boat, the new boat, actually, the owing it.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't know where the money came from.
Well, yeah, we don't know where the money came from. I think that the person or persons that have the lien on the new boat might be shifty. I think that father figure, previous ship's captain, potentially was shifty as well.
Yeah. Oh, I like the idea of
not a bad man, but a man of questionable moral character on occasion.
I like the idea of you signing a contract you couldn't read.
Yeah, for sure.
Know what you signed.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah.
What did you agree to? Because I'm going to need to know it for plot purposes.
Well, so I hadn't really thought that far ahead.
What do you need him to agree
to? Yeah, I think that's actually fair. What do you need me to agree to? But I certainly think that, I mean, conceptually, in my idea, that it is essentially... what's the word I'm looking for? Indentured servitude, right? So that the likelihood of me ever making enough money to pay off this boat is extremely unrealistic.
Yeah.
Right. That I'm gonna be paying off this boat for the rest of my life was kind of the idea that I was looking at. Now, will it be possible in the future to get out of said contract? I don't know. Does my character even care about getting out of said contract? I don't know. I mean, there's the certain level of ignorance being bliss, right? Where I have my friends, I have the river, I have a comfortable life. There are people out in this world that have it way worse than I do.
I got it.
So,
okay. So the collateral for the boat, because you could always abscond with the boat, right?
Right.
The collateral on the boat is a family vineyard. And if you don't pay it off somehow, then the family loses the vineyard and all of your family that's working the vineyard gets evicted.
Okay.
Or all right. Possibly themselves put into some form of indentured servitude or debt slavery.
All right. And so then we have to have some sort of time frame on the debt has to be paid by X number of years. Right. Okay.
And then you view it as, you know, you're never going to pay this off.
Right.
We view it as we could do this. You know, we crunch the numbers like, man, that's going to be hard, but we might be able to do that.
Right. Well, and it opens up animosity for, you know, brothers, sisters, cousins, et cetera, who are upset with me, A, for signing this contract, and B, you know, who may think that I could be a better helmsman than you, or they want to somehow get out of the contract so the family doesn't lose the vineyard.
I kind of like the idea that you and I have a bit of an ego about what we do.
Yeah.
So we see it as we're rolling into town and we're going to roll these rubes.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. See, I picture myself as being relatively guileless.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne, what about you? Could you give me something here from your background? Mm-hmm. And if not, if the answer is no, you need to come back to this, you can come back to this. But I will definitely want some plot hooks from you.
Yeah.
Because I've got something now for Brodor. I've definitely got plenty for Chad. And it sounds like with the captain, if he was shady, I might be. There's probably some more into Brodor.
Yeah, I like the idea.
An idea for one that is. I kind of like the idea that I have a child in one of these towns that I don't know about. That one of the times that I rolled in, something happened in the bar, and we're going to get.
We don't know what.
And that at some point during the game, we're going to roll into this town, and I'm going to have a child that I don't know about, and maybe an angry father. Or
I can walk you through that. I know how this works. I know when the whore walks up to the barge captain and says, "This is yours."
Yeah. But I like that idea of that I have a surprise waiting for me out in one of the towns that I don't know about. And I think I know everything about these towns. And I come in and here's this big surprise.
And
it has eyes like mine.
How old are you?
I was thinking early, 21.
Yeah, we're thinking early 20s.
I guess that's how old this child could be. So it's going to be young.
And I have it in mind that it was when I first started out and when I jumped on board at 17.
So 4-ish years old toddler.
Okay. Yep. So, yeah.
Well, post. Not coming on the boat.
Yeah.
No.
So was ship captains, was he actually my father? Or did he actually take me as payment of some sort of debt? Mm-hmm. He took me away from the mother of, you know, the mother might from my mom gave me to this man to say, this is yours. Right. But am I really his? He raised me as his.
OK, so anything else on the group? If not, let's move to the next part.
Guns. Buying guns.
I said, if I think of anything else over time, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
That's the first one that jumps out at me.
Sweet loot is in this game.
That's right.
All right.
Because I got to know what Brodor has so I can take it when I kill him.
This one, you push
me in the river. Swimming's one of the few things I do.
There was something I noticed about every time that I've run Skies of Glass, which is the game tends to really, well, there's a lot of elements to it. There's a lot of things going on. If you really look at what the game is about, it really seems to be about social context. How do you fit into what the world has become? And what is it you are trying to achieve, even if that's just staying alive within what the world has become? Chad put it pretty well in his description of the game as saying that the world has gotten big enough to sort of start crawling out of the ashes and making mistakes again.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I actually am opting to do in this shot at the rules, and I want to see how this goes, is the system behind the group is actually about as complicated as what is in an individual character. So the group has its own character sheet that describes what you're doing. So in this case, your group worksheet, we're going to start with a question, what is your group? Okay, so you could be farmers, you could be traveling mercenaries, you could be explorers, you could be survivalists, you could be bandits. In your
Mars,
case,
Mars Black Ops Commandos.
You could be. Yeah. In your case,
I'm on a boat.
In your case, you are a boat crew. Okay, so now what we have, and I'll scan this in so people can see this sheet, but what we have on this worksheet is, and Wayne, I'm going to have you do this because this just seems like your sort of thing, is we first of all, you guys have, your group has four major attributes. And these are going to be resources that are you are going to both accumulate and lose throughout the game. Now, this may happen based on plot points I throw out, like a storm rolls through. You know, no, but it's not a major thing. It's just a storm rolls through what happens. Or it could be something that happens in the plot. For example, you guys just chase down and totally hoodwink some NPC and walk off with his life savings. And all of a sudden, boom, you got it. You're flush with cash you didn't have before. Okay. Mm. Or you're really nice to someone who's really important. And all of a sudden that changes how you guys, the contacts you have. Right. So this could happen by character action, or this could happen just through me simply deigning that there's an Oregon Trail level event.
I like that we hoodwink somebody and they have more powerful friends.
So, all right. So the one on the left is opportunity. Now, opportunity represents, well, literally opportunity. Okay. For example, with you guys with river trading, this might be knowing about the needs of a major town, like knowing that this town just had an outbreak of kudzu or something like that and has a wood shortage. Or knowing that here's where there's, I don't know, I guess that's the easiest one, is the need of a town. Or knowing that a shipment washed up somewhere and is kind of there for the taking. So opportunity represents simply the amount of the chance you have of doing something meaningful. If you guys were farmers, opportunity could be hardier seeds. Opportunity could be fertile land. Opportunity could be knowing that a famine is likely to occur in a neighboring town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. People, this is literally the individuals within your organization and their relevant power. Okay. Now, if we were playing a game where it's just you guys, this would represent your relative strength when compared to the people that you were competing with. In your case, you do have NPCs, and this is going to represent them. This is their literal health and well-being. Resources. Resources represent your material wealth, and your supplies. Incidentally, contacts fall under opportunities. So you're just curious. So resources represent literally cash on hand. Okay, so this is stuff that none of you own personally, but the group as a whole has. The boat is obviously your primary resource. And then last of all is image. Now, image is twofold. Image is both the internal morale of your group, but it is also the external reputation that you have with the people that you regularly interact with.
It's what gets us on the radio.
That's right.
Precisely. Well, and it's also how well does your crew like you? For example, let's say you have a situation where the boat's going to go through some bad weather, okay? And the crew is really eager to get home to their families. They want to get back to Herman faster. Well, if you guys decide to push it, you're risking the people and the resources, but you're choosing to do what they want, so you're going to boost image. You're going to boost the morale of them because they see you're willing to take a risk for them. Now, if you choose we're going to weather this in some safe port, then obviously your people are safe. They may not be happy, but they're safe. And the resources, well, assuming you don't get robbed, are safe. But morale might drop because they're like, you didn't have any faith in us. We could have pushed through this. Now I've got to wait. I can't be there when my child's born. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you guys get a sense of kind of how this
child's
works?
Not going to live? Come on.
But I'm not going to be there to see my wife die in childbirth.
So, it's an auspicious occasion.
So do you guys get a sense of kind of how this part of it works?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what
from a concept standpoint?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll see it better in execution. All right, so what happens then is the game works in these major phases. Okay, so there's the play of the game, but every so often, let's say you guys do a successful haul. You drop off the cargo, you sell it, the transaction's done. That sort of closes out an overarching phase of the game. All right, if this was a farm, it might be a season or something like that. And what happens at that point, there's a way we're going to evaluate the status of the cards, and you guys can choose to basically cash in some of that stuff to create what we call wealth. This is going to work kind of like the coins do in Blades in the Dark. Mm-hmm. And that wealth then will become an abstracted form of major resources that you can pull strings with this mayor. You have a huge stockpile of silver coins. You have a whole lot of goodwill from amongst your crew to where they're willing to do some unpaid work. Whatever it is, but you have now accrued expendable wealth that you can put towards major projects, paying off the boat.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be because you have actual cash, could be because you have a mayor who's willing to say, hey, you owe me, so why don't you just round some money off what they owe you? It could be because you've endeared yourself so much to the crew, they're like, you know what? I'm going to, instead of getting drunk in the bar throughout this winter, I'm actually going to go do some pathfinding, and whatever I bring back, I'll put it towards your debt, right? So So this is what that wealth becomes, and you can stack up coins here, and I'll give you little coins over time that you can stack up there. And then you as a group, I'm going to give you things that you can spend it on. So you can choose, and now some of these are going to be obvious things, like you can choose to pay off loans.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose to invest in that crashed vessel you found. Some of these can also be done to pull metagame or not quite metagame plot things. Like, let's say one of you has a crippling injury. You guys might choose to ditch some of that wealth to pay off a high-end merchant who's coming from Waycross to bring the necessary medical materials to rehabilitate a limb. So there's also, or you've pissed off a mayor of a town, and you need to work that out. And this is so dangerous, you can't even go there. You might be asked to spend some wealth to send somebody on your behalf to smooth that over. So wealth can be spent on a variety of projects, both in-game and sort of metagame. Okay, so you guys follow what wealth is?
Yep.
Now, these skulls actually aren't as bad as they look. These skulls actually work in your favor, sort of. Each of you has a role that you perform within the group. Now, what happens is when you roll the dice that are meant to be part of that role and you fail, you get to put a die on the skulls until you have three of them filled up. That becomes a die pool that the group as a whole can bank from at any given moment.
Hmm.
So if Chad botches a contract negotiation, this basically becomes sort of like a karma pool.
Right.
Where as a game master, you can bank that die.
Hmm.
And now let's say later you're in a storm and somebody basically decides to follow Daddy-O's route and go into a sand whatever it is, and fails that roll, you can pull that die out of the failure bank to say, okay, seriously, God could not hate us this much. Yeah.
You're welcome in advance for me filling up that.
So, yes, I'm sure Wayne will keep this regular. Now, this is separate from your individual bullets.
Sure.
So this is not the bullet pull.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you guys could use it individually, but this is group consensus, okay?
Okay.
So this is all group level stuff. So at the conceptual level, and for you guys at home, once again, I'll have posted this. Do you guys follow what this is at the high level? Okay. So these will run in suit. So Wayne, I'm going to give you this. Now, here's what I'm going to do. All right. I have in front of me only one suit at the moment because I don't want you drawing the same card twice. So we'll draw from this set of ace through 10. Ace is a one. This is not blackjack. Ace is not one or 11. Ace is one. So you have 8-1 through 10 here in the cards, and we'll draw from only one stack, so that you don't get duplicate cards, but then I will replace them with the card of the correct suit. So, once again, if you're at home, you can see this, but opportunity is spades, manpower is clubs, wealth is diamonds, morale is, and reputation is hearts. Okay. Now, what I'm going to let you guys decide before you draw, before I shuffle this, you guys can choose as many cards as you want me to drop off the bottom, but I'll drop an equal number off the top. So if you ask me to drop the ace, I will also drop the 10. Do you want to drop any cards?
I would say no. Let's try the system as it is.
Yeah,
let's
okay. do it.
Then, all right, let's go ahead. And what we're going to do now is we're going to draw these one at a time. And we're going to place it on the slot. And what those blanks are for is when we're going to have to explain them. Now, okay. the additional blanks is because obviously things will change during the game. You'll gain things or whatever. And this is to explain what that represents. If you have opportunity, what is the opportunity, right? Okay. okay. So this is what this is to explain. So who wants to be the first up to draw?
Oh, I'll do it.
Okay. So Chad, from anywhere within this, pick it up. This is the group's current opportunity. So there's all 10 cards. Draw one out. Okay, place that. That is the group's opportunity. So the group's opportunity is a 3. Not great, but certainly could be worse. So the group's starting opportunity is a 3. Wayne, you said you have a knowledge of the surrounding towns. If you want for the current opportunity, you can just put general understanding of geography, or, you know, just knows local culture and geography. Nothing exciting. You guys don't have a treasure map, but your head's not up your ass.
Not yet.
Right. I was just thinking.
Should I try to keep everything on one line?
It's up to you. It's your sheet. Okay. Do whatever hell you want.
How soon will I be tempted to smuggle or sell illicit goods to the wrong people that we're not approved to sell them to make extra cash to pay off this damn boat?
Because of pressure.
Because of pressure from the family.
Has a group effect, but. Uh-huh. Okay, so which one of you wants to draw next for people?
I'll get it out of the way.
All right, this is going to be the quality of your NPCs. So the quality of your NPCs.
We know it's not going to be a 3. It's going to be a 5.
Okay, so you guys actually have some kind of middle-of-the-road NPCs. All right, so Wayne, what we'll do is we'll come back to writing that out, but you guys are either going to have a small number of really good NPCs or a more modest number of middle-of-the-road NPCs. I can't imagine on a boat you guys will want to have a football team of morons.
or maybe, you know, it depends on how manual the operation of the boat is.
So go ahead and put up there, we know at least one of those is the pit fighter. So you have an ex-pit fighter. Now, beyond that, I do know...
Who isn't cut.
There could be.
Or maybe.
It depends on how many other NPCs you want. So we'll come back to that because I know we need to know what Eric's PC is going to be.
Yeah.
And if we get a fifth person,
right.
Zach or Memory to play, then we'll need to know what they are. So for now, we'll put that there. But we do know you have an ex-pit fighter. If he ends up being your only NPC at a 5, he's actually going to be a pretty bad, big badass.
Okay.
Who wants to draw the next card? Sure. So this is your starting wealth. This is your resources and supplies.
Watch be a big one.
8.
Wow. Okay. Nice. So when the game starts, you have the boat. You have it. And it's apparently laden with a pretty good value cargo.
I like the idea that we're just setting up.
And you are well supplied. Food, basic medical supplies, bandages, things like that.
Guns, ammo.
That is what comes out of wealth. Yeah. And you guys can dip these pools. You guys can say things like, okay, I need a rifle. I don't have one. I'm going to turn that 8 into a 7, and I now have a rifle. Okay. You guys can dip those pools.
Now, is that just mechanically, this is a thing that we decide on as a group, or someone can just say, I'm getting a gun. You know, fuck you guys. I'm getting a gun.
Well, there's the role-playing reality and what I would prefer.
Yeah.
I would prefer you guys agree as a group.
Yeah.
There is the role-playing reality that one of you goes off the ranch. I'm not going to stop you, but it is also going to be interesting for you to note. I mean, you guys live on this boat all the time. Yeah. You know it pretty well. And suddenly that rifle with Brodor's tramp stamp on it is now suddenly in Chad's bag. I mean,
I like the idea for a good cargo. Either we've just left, so we have all of this wine that we know will sell really well in St. Louis, particularly. Or we've been doing some shrewd trading and... We just left a town and left
Yeah.
We got something really good.
Or we could have a crazy mix of shit. We've just been wheeling.
You're also well supplied, if you've not noted that.
I got boat, well supplied, good cargo.
Okay. I like the idea of we just did some shrewd trading because we've kind of blown our opportunities, right?
Yeah.
So now we have all this stuff, but we're like, well, now what are we going to do with all this stuff?
Yeah.
And Wayne, if you want to add that as an explanation on three, you can put tapped out closest markets.
Yeah.
So if you want to put that as an explanation on three, put tapped out.
So we have got to hit the river and put some miles because we have drained everything dry.
Right. Here. You've got it, but nobody wants it.
Yeah. The only thing that we could do is trade back for the stuff we gave them.
Are you guys getting a better sense of how this works?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that explanation a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So last one, who wants to draw for the starting morale, internal morale, and or external image of the group? Seven. Okay.
Nice.
So you guys, there's a pretty good... Okay. So now you can choose how you want to split this. But either people have a high opinion of you, and or at a seven, you can probably get away with both, or your crew's pretty well, pretty excited, pretty confident. I mean, if you're well stocked, you've got good cargo. I think with
this, our crew is excited and confident.
So I think
they're going to get paid for once.
Okay, so you can put down, you know, courageous and confident crew. That people, the people you've got with you are feeling pumped. Okay, so I can go ahead now and replace those with the correct suits. Like I said, it started with one set of cards, or irons, just so you didn't draw. Okay, so Wayne, your hearts is, so you have seven of hearts.
Yep, seven of hearts, eight of diamonds.
Eight of diamonds, let's see.
Five of clubs.
Seven of hearts.
Give me half the stack. I can go
through. Okay. Seven of hearts, eight of diamonds. You said five of clubs?
Eight of diamonds.
And five of clubs. Okay. So go ahead and give me back the other cards then. And so now there is your actual starting deck. Okay. And you will have to accrue wealth by doing something. Well, something. there's a number of ways you could accrue. Well, like I said, in the major phases of the game, there will come a cash out period where we'll look at your cards and evaluate them, and you'll be able to cash that into wealth. And then I'm going to have to tweak this because obviously I've never done this before, but we're going to have a price sheet of what different things are going to cost. Mm-hmm. And you guys will have to figure out what you're spending that on. Or, if this was a military game, I'd say you just have one person who makes those decisions and everyone else lives with it. Do you guys have a captain? Do you guys have someone who's in charge?
The way I look at it is there's a master and a commander. Because that's how it happened on, boats. It's like you had a guy who's captain of the boat. Raise those sails. You drop anchor. We're going here. Fire on those guys. That's the captain. And so the commander. So the master of the boat is the guy who basically runs the boat. He owns the boat. He's the money guy. And he says, okay, commander, we need to go and we need to capture French vessels in this general area. And we have enough food and supplies and monies to do that for this long.
Either Brodor or Wayne is the master, and I don't. And
so I see it as Brodor is the commander, and then Wayne is the master.
Okay,
I like that.
Yeah, he's the master of the ship, and you're the
right. Even though my butt's in the sling financially.
I like that a lot too. You had the books, and you were both master and commander.
Right, and then, I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah,
right.
And
you had no.
Yeah, clearly, I can't do it. I signed a really bad contract. Right.
You had no business acumen, and that's what I have.
Yeah, right,
but I have no. I can't captain a boat.
Right. But you know people.
You might not even know how to
towns,
swim.
You know their resources. Right. Yeah. You might not know how to swim.
Wayne, also.
This is my ace of the hole, so to speak.
Could you add two unwhispered GC draft horses?
Ooh.
That's.
Where do you. Do you just write that?
No. Under
resources.
Oh, under resources.
I'm sorry. I said wealth. I'm sorry. That was my bad. Yeah, so that's, you have two unwhispered GC draft horses that are used to help pull the boat.
Now, what does unwhispered mean again?
What unwhispered means is that no one has figured out precisely what their product line or lineage is.
Gotcha.
And therefore doesn't know what their command words are, doesn't know exactly how to use them. Now, what you will know, you will notice, they eat less than a normal horse does, they drink less than a normal horse does, they sleep less than a normal horse does, they're stronger, they're larger than a normal horse is, but how to use, like, does this thing have some kind of gland that you could amputate to pour out, like, regenerating
right.
cell tissue? Maybe. Nobody knows. Does it have specific command words that will make it do really peculiar tasks? You guys don't know. Because right. you would have to find somebody who actually knows how to figure out its lineage and its product line and all that kind of stuff.
I could see that being something like you're selling books, but I also would expect that you'd be looking for them out there too.
I'm also a salvager.
That might be something that you're looking for is the a product line.
Yeah.
Okay. So the actual character sheets now. You'll notice I've simplified the character sheets a fair amount, but let's talk about, because I this is something I struggled with for a bit, but I think I found a place I want them to go. All right. So let's start with the top, well, character. When you come up with a name, I know it's the most difficult blank on the character sheet.
Philip Carstairs.
Fuck you, Wayne.
Chet Manley.
Chet Manley. Dick Johnson. Dick Johnson. The detective.
Thor Chest Pump.
When you come up with a name, put that on character. Okay. The five attributes. Bullets is not an attribute. You can put a number for bullets, but I'll actually be giving you actual physical props to use as the bullets. Bullets in Skies of Glass are used as a variety of personal perks, rerolls, things like that. It's your personal supply of ways in which to nudge the game, whereas that represents the group's health and ways of nudging the game.
And it can be used as an actual in-game bullet.
Yes. If you run out of ammo, you can turn in one of your bullets to actually reach into your pocket and, like, pulling out that $20 bill you forgot about, pull out a bullet. So that can, in fact, actually happen. All right, so the other five, though, these are your attributes. Body. Body represents your strength and personal endurance, your overall build.
Well, Chet Manley's got a great body.
Agility, which represents both your fine and gross motor dexterity, so your balance, your aim, things like that. Perception, both the acuity of your senses and how well you notice things. How likely are you to notice something occurring around you? Smarts, literal intelligence. Social, this is both your social charisma. It's your general social charisma. This could be personality. This could be pleasant disposition. This could also be attractive looks. You have a total of 30 points to spend. The scale is 2 to 10. So nothing lower than 2, nothing higher than 10. Chad, if you want an easy way to start, that starts with them all at 6.
Okay. Well, I'll just do that then. And 6 bullets, right?
Actually, 3 bullets.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Thank you.
Everyone has 3 bullets. I will give you the actual prop bullets next time we play. But for now, you just put 3 there. Okay. And these guys are working on that. So while they're working on that, I guess I can vamp a bit or I can just pause it. Well, see what questions you guys have, if any.
So let's say I go the 10 in social, 10 in smarts, and I dump everything else. I mean, what exactly is a 2 in body? Am I a quadriplegic, or am I just not very strong?
You are pretty damn frail. You're not quite quadriplegic, but you are definitely sort of sickly and frail. I'm not sure you want to go that far down. If you go 10 and 10, though, it leaves you with, what, 10 points across 3. So that's 2 threes and a 4.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, let's do that. Let's do 10 and 10, 2 threes and a 4, and see how the game handles sure. min-maxing.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Because I'm sure these guys will make a more well-rounded character.
So for negotiations, that would fall under social, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
I'm a spellcaster.
So how dumb is a 4?
I'm assuming we'll go with the usual thing of characters in this game tend to run a tiny bit above average. Not a lot. Not D&D above average, but they tend to run above average. So at a 4, you are slightly below average intelligence. You're not a moron,
but
Chad definitely has to explain things to you sometimes.
Okay. All right, so then I'm going to go 7 body, 7 perception, 5 social, 6 agility, 5 smarts.
Okay.
So I'm a little well-rounded, but obviously the physical and the perception, the body and the physical, I'm a little bit better at, just for, you know, having a strong back as someone who works the river and moves cargo. And
right.
Having perception to, you know, sort of read the river, if you will.
So Chet Manley is going.
Are you really Chet Manley?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Because I was like, God damn it.
I would not allow him to be Chet Manley.
So like, Chet Manley, book procurator, procurer.
I'm so smart and good looking too. Chet Manley is going three body, three agility. So we're doing dump stats in that. Four perception. So, man, you know.
Yeah.
Smarts is 10 and social is 10. So he's
are incredibly.
Yeah.
Like, incredibly intelligent, incredibly groomed. And I mean, socially groomed.
Right, right.
I mean, you may also be hygienically groomed.
I understand the importance of soap. So that's a couple points right there. But yeah, I mean, that's why they grabbed him. You know, not, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
They wish he had a little bit of meat on his bones, but they grabbed him for his brain.
Yeah, and it's possible, depending on what your parents thought, this is something you can work out in your own background. Your parents, one, may have simply not realized your value. Two, may have pushed you in that direction because of the benefits that would bring.
Yeah.
Because someone taking one of the mass families prisoner doesn't really help. Mm-hmm. Or third, they may have attempted to pull a Twilight Zone thing and tried to hide your intelligence to keep you from getting taken away. Or was that an Outer Limits episode?
That was I, Claudius. That was Roman history. But Claudius, he had a stutter and I think he had a hump. He had a lot of these disabilities. He was outrageously intelligent, but he was not quite in line for the throne. But because there were so many, Caesar and all that, you know, killing each other, poisoning each other and all this, they were dying left and right. He pretended to be stupid. I mean, like, mentally handicapped
pants
levels. Pants on head retard. Stupid. And so that no one would bother assassinating him. There's no reason to kill him. He'll never be the emperor. Until Rome fell into revolt, and the only living guy they found who was in line for the throne was him hiding behind a curtain, and it was the Praetorian Guard.
Yeah.
And so they grabbed him, put him on their shoulders, and rode him around. And then they're like, okay, you're the emperor. You do what he says. But he's actually really, really smart and intelligent, made all these reforms and changes.
All right. So question again. What all was agility used for?
Agility is going to be used for both gross and fine motor skills.
It's for not falling off the boat.
Well, that could be body, depending on what you're doing, or perception. But agility is going to be things like aiming a gun, walking a tightrope,
I'm debating on which one I want to put it four and which one I want to put it three between body and agility. And I'm thinking agility at four and body at three.
Yeah. See, I'm tempted with dropping social from five to four, but then I thought I need to have some semblance of command presence for dealing with the crew. So I think well-rounded is probably better. For
what I'm looking at right now, stat-wise, body three, perception 8, social 8, agility 4, smart 7.
Mm-hmm. There's also a matter of
very perceptive, very social.
Like, wildly. Not using social to lead, but, you know, you roll up your sleeves and you pitch in.
Right.
And people follow that.
Yeah, there is a respect that doesn't come from presence. So I mean, it's possible that's what you get it from. Okay, the skills. Here's how skills work. As I was thinking about the skills in Skies of Glass, and as I thought about it, people in Skies of Glass, it really doesn't make quite sense for them to have skills because it's much more a game of about who you are in the abstract.
Mm.
So because I also wanted to put a lot more emphasis on what the group is, I decided to make the skills describe your relationship to the group. All right, so you have four blanks there. The top one, competence. This is, think of this, I guess, kind of fate-ish. Where I want you to put down a word or phrase that best describes what it is you represent to the group. So, for example, Wayne, in your case, it might be merchantman. In Broder, in your case, it might be kind of, you know, like river survivalist or something like that.
Okay, so you want something more plain versus something more abstract.
Correct. This should be descriptive, but unlike fate, don't put something down there that's like,
learn to read the river from old man Perkins.
I was thinking shrewd horse trader.
Yeah.
Although not, I don't actually mean trading horses. Right. But
yeah. If you wrote it that way, you would literally be a horse trader.
Right.
So, but This represents your... Now, what's going to happen there is whenever you roll to accomplish something, you're going to roll a D10, but in your area of competence, you will roll 2D10 and pick the highest of the two. So this represents your primary role to the group and what you're really best at. So this is how you fit into the group.
You know, I could also... Is the boat mechanical or manual? Because I could be the guy who fixes the engine.
Well, that was going to be a question, is... depending on which house you came from.
Yeah, I could be like a craftsman.
I was saying, you know, we could pop...
Not with that agility score, you don't.
Well, he can explain without doing.
Yeah, yeah. So you're not going to be doing a lot of fine-tuned crafting.
Kind of hands-on guy.
Yeah, which is fair, but...
Yeah.
You know what, actually... Well, actually, your primary area of interest as of right now is law and law, contract, and literacy.
Yeah.
For general competence, you could just put something like scribe librarian.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Now, because you will have another place, like if you want to be like a general engineer, we can still come back to that. So,
well, I could say cleric, not in the sense of I'm a D&D healer, but
clerk.
Clerk, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys navigate the river. I navigate the bureaucracy.
Actually, they navigate the river.
You try not to fall in.
Okay. The opposite.
I try not to fall in.
Oh, go ahead, Bert. Already, have you picked?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm definitely going to go with some permutation of riverboat captain, riverboat commander, riverboat guru. Yeah, I'm not going to use the word guru because it's douchey, but... Yeah, I mean, I'm something I don't have to make it flowery. So yeah, riverboat captain or reliable captain.
Legal navigator. Or is that too flowery?
I was thinking lawyer originally.
Lawyer, yeah. Yeah, I can do lawyer too.
Bureaucrat.
Bureaucrat.
A level 43 bureaucrat.
Okay, this is a Greek word. I'm going to look up how to spell it. How would the title of paraclete? A paraclete is a combination lawyer, clerk, learned man who, like, think of this kind of like someone who's a general practitioner, who's a generally learned person. Mm-hmm. And when something goes wrong, this is the first person you call to be like, I don't know what to do. Mm. The cops are on my doorstep. My son was just diagnosed with some disease, whatever. It's just kind of, but it's somebody who is in your corner by virtue of being a learned and socially connected person.
Okay.
I'll have to look up how the heck you spell that.
He spells it wrong. That's how he spells it. That's how I would spell it. So
as long as it is phonetic, I can totally live with that. So
para, like paramedic, cleat, like in spikes on your shoes.
Sure. Yeah, like two shoes for playing soccer.
Yeah.
Oof. That sounded like it hurt.
No.
Oh, right on.
Wow. Well, actually, it's paraclete.
E-T-E.
Yeah, C-L-E-T-E.
E-T-E. All right. Chet Manley's a paraclete.
I keep forgetting that we're not editing this. It's actually more difficult.
Actually, Chad, here's the writings of... this is writings of a Greek philosopher explaining, actually kind of bitching about paracletes. Citizens of Athens, I do not doubt that you are pretty well aware that this trial has been the center of keen partisanship and active canvassing. For you saw the people who were accosting and annoying you just now at the casting of lots. But I have to make a request, which ought to be granted without asking, that you will all give less weight to private entreaty or personal influence than to the spirit of justice and to the oath which you have severally sworn when you entered that box. You will reflect that justice and oath concern yourselves and the commonwealth, whereas the importunity and party spirit of paracletes serve the end of those private ambitions which you are convened by the laws to thwart, not to encourage, for the advantage of evildoers.
Excellent.
I like how you steepled your fingers there.
Okay, the opposite of this, go down to the bottom one, is your incompetence. This is the area where you struggle the most. We're going to do the reverse. You roll 2d10, you take the lowest of the two.
Taking a punch?
You could put combat. I mean, I will
put combat.
I'm going to put subterfuge.
Now, the rule that I'm using is I want the broadness or narrowness of each to match. So if your competence is the M1 Grand, then your incompetence can be a particular brand of fork. So conversely, if your competence is
guns,
yeah, your incompetence better be like
silverware.
Bitches.
My competence is a paraclete, which means I am competent in law and bureaucracy and clerking and that sort of thing. My incompetence is combat, like all of it. Shooting, getting punched, throwing a punch, hiding from combat.
So your incompetence is what it is. The party knows you do not go to this person for that.
There's like a big shootout, and then my character picks a gun up off the ground, and everybody stops, and everybody is like, just put it down. You're going to hurt
even your own side. Like, yeah, just hand it to someone on the other side.
Because right, it'd be safer for you, for us, for everyone.
So you were a plain man.
That's sort of the way I see him is that he's a relatively simple guy. Yeah. And in fact, in some regards, he is too simple, right? And so the challenge of this world, because he's a young man, right? I mean, I'm 42 years old. I'm not the guy that I was when I was 22 years old. And there are certain realities that were learned as I aged. And for him and his youth, I see him as a relatively guileless, simple guy who wants to do the right thing. But then there is this world outside that he has to learn to cope with, right? Yeah. And so he has failings where, you know, Chad's character, sorry, Chet Manley.
Right.
Where Mr. Manley, whom I idolize.
Esquire.
So Esquire's right. So Mr. Manley has, you know, he has a skill set that I do not possess, right? And so on some level, they sort of look out for me in those things, right? Mm. But the real challenge is going to be the temptation to engage in behavior that I am bad at, because the rewards will be so great.
Yeah. And the way my character sees him, it's like, you are a good person, and maybe I'm not such a good person, because I am definitely, I will use the letter of the law against you to my own aims. And it's like, my character directs that weapon to protect him, because people keep taking advantage of him. And it's like, that just really, really enrages my character.
Dan, I have an idea for one, but let me run this by you, see if it's a equal one. So my competence is merchant.
Mm-hmm.
For incompetence, I was thinking something along the lines of, the first thing that jumped to mind was like engineer or mechanic. So what I had in mind is that he can't fix anything. So sometimes even when he's looking at something that is a potential trade good, he knows the value of one thing from town to town, but he doesn't necessarily know if that can be fixed.
Okay, provided you're willing to extend this to mechanisms in general.
Yeah.
Meaning things like if you're trying to field strip a gun, if you're trying to pick a lock.
Yeah, he is not mechanical minded at all. He can't fix anything.
Okay, then your incompetence put down mechanics.
Oh yeah, and you've got two. I mean, I think that you certainly fulfilled the requirement of broad, because your competence of merchant is very broad. Your, you know, mechanics is also a very broad category.
And they can be narrow. The only thing I require is that the game master ought to accept that they are equally broad or equally narrow.
And actually, I'm going to switch body and agility, because that's one of the reasons why he's particularly bad at it.
He's all thumbs.
Yeah.
Do do do. The fingers with which you are dialing are too fat.
Have you been looking at my phone?
No, it's a clip of The Simpsons.
Right, of course
he's,
it is.
He's Homer, there's an episode where Homer wants to become disabled so he can work from home. And so he decides that the disability he's going to go for is crippling obesity. And there comes a point where the nuclear plant's about to blow up because he wasn't doing his job. And he's trying to call somebody to get them to save literally like the city. And he hears like him pressing four buttons at once each time. And it's like, you hear doo-doo-doo. The fingers with which you are dialing are too fat. To receive a special dialing one, mash the keypad now. Freaking great quote. All right. Reliability and struggle. All right. Now, reliability and struggle, they can be a sub portion of your competence and incompetence. They do not have to be. Once again, they must be equally broad or equally narrow. I would encourage these to be more narrow. The way they work is reliability is going to be rolled as the skill would normally be rolled, either as part of your competence or not. But your reliability can never get a critical failure or a catastrophic failure, which is worse than a critical failure. Your struggle is the reverse. It can never get a critical success. That's not to say you can't succeed at it, but you will never succeed critically. So the reliability and struggle, if they are a subdivision of your competence and incompetence, that's mega dice. Because what happens is if you take your reliability and you take that alongside your competence, you roll 2d10, and even if they're both ones, it's still not treated as a critical failure. You take the one, that's all you get, but you don't take the penalty for it having been a critical or catastrophic failure. Your struggle is the reverse. You cannot get a critical success. You can get a critical failure, but not a success. And listen, these can be subdivisions. So it could be, so for example, you could say, Wayne, your incompetence is mechanics, but your real struggle is with engines. If you touch an engine, you are going to burn the ship down too. But it doesn't have to be. You could have a different struggle. You could say, for example, your struggle is long arms because you don't have good distance vision. So it doesn't. It could be completely unrelated. Once again, however narrow or broad one is, the other must be as well. And anything not covered by one of these four will always just be rolled as a straight D10. 10 will explode once as a critical success. One will get removed and then re-rolled as a negative penalty. So if you roll a one, it's critical failure. You take the die away, roll it again. If you roll seven is subtracted from your roll.
And how do the stats add into that, like body perception?
So the way this works is, let's say that you roll a skill that's not covered by anything. Like, Wayne, right now, combat's not covered at all for you.
Right.
So you pull out a pistol and you pull the trigger. Okay, I'm going to deem that agility because it's a dexterous action. You will roll a single D10. That D10 is added to agility, and either you made the target number or you didn't.
Okay.
If it is a competence, you would roll 2D10 and pick the best. If it's an incompetence, you'd roll 2d10 and pick the worst. If it's a reliability, so you're something you always do reliably, you cannot critically fail. You can fail, but not critically fail. And if it's a struggle, then you cannot critically succeed. This is just something that you can never do right. Or never do outstandingly. Like,
can I take something for reliability, like reputation or presence? I mean, he does not hide. There's only one thing that he keeps a secret, and that's he's working for someone. Everybody knows he got plucked by one of the houses in St. Louis, and everybody knows that he walked out of St. Louis.
So he's local famous?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, then yes, put down for your struggle, blending in.
Mm.
Going unnoticed. What do you call that? Incognito.
Yeah, okay.
It's incognito. I believe it's Latin. I don't know, it's probably Greek. I always get it wrong.
It's Belgian.
It's Belgian, sure. Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
It's a waffle.
Right. So reliability, though, would be But local famous or famous, I guess. I don't know, fame, like we think of fame, is not like a rock star. People aren't running up to meet him, but everybody knows who he is, and everybody knows who he is in a positive way. And goes in with the
I'm okay with that. Actually, it's the same thing working positively and negatively. So the reliability would be recognition.
Okay.
If you want people to know who you are, you cannot horribly fail at it, because somebody's going to recognize you. Or if not, you can freaking wrap a mask and robes and be like, see?
Yeah.
And you do have your walking paper, so you don't wear them, but you can. You can say, this is what I was, and you've got the papers to prove it.
And he also has a reputation that he's building in parallel with that, of being someone who goes from town to town and settles legal disputes. He teaches people how to read when he goes into town. He sells books. Is St. Louis actively suppressing learning?
No.
They're
just not promoting it. And within their own ranks. Okay, so within the machine, so within the organization that runs St. Louis, the houses collectively known as the machine, they suppress learning only insofar as they see it as a waste of time for someone where that's not their job. That if you're becoming literate or whatever, they don't see value in a general education for the general populace. Now, if you live in the areas immediately surrounding St. Louis, so the suburbs, the ghettos, whatever, that surround St. Louis, they don't stop anybody from doing it. They're just not doing anything to promote it.
Gotcha. But yeah, he is two tracks of recognition. It's one.
That is an interesting thing. Yeah, to have the exact same thing, both positive and negative.
Mm-hmm. What's good about it's bad about it. Yeah. So can these change with character growth? Do I evolve? I mean, for example, for my reliability, one of the things that I envision, if you'll excuse the pun, is that my character has very good eyesight, because the ability to see to read the water levels based on the bank of the river, the ability to be able to see, those low areas, those, sand berms or what have you that you might run into, flotsam, jetsam, etc., all is important. But right, if I take a hit to the face and I lose an eye, that's going to suck later, right? So I don't know. Or let's say, for example, I evolve in my character. My struggle is I'm exploitable, right? Because I don't have a lot of guile. And because, I mean, I'm not dumb. I'm just, I see the world in relative simple blacks and whites. Is there a way that I can evolve? And I'm like, I'm not the knucklehead I was.
I would allow
20 games ago.
I would allow it so long as, one, there's a good story reason for it, and two, you remain in some kind of balance.
Right.
So if you take one to the eye and lose the reliability of eye,
right,
then
it opens your third eye and you can see the future.
Or my brown eye. But he's been to Rape Town. It's open.
Right. But I would give you some kind of something to replace that.
Sure.
With.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just curious.
Or if you did something really impressive to work off, like a struggle or incompetence, I'd allow it, but I'd want you to replace it with something else.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I was just curious mechanically if that ever changed.
Okay. So
I have, for my reliability, and we'll see if these kind of balance or not, appraisal.
So okay.
Particularly what the subset of merchant that he's particularly good at is telling what the value of something
that
is.
That is merchanting, so you would get 2d10 and you would just ignore a one.
My struggle is guns.
Okay.
What I particularly had in mind for that is the actual shooting of them. He is a horrible, horrible shot.
Okay.
Just a shot, though. I mean, he could beat somebody with a pipe.
Possessions.
Yeah, that's why I didn't put combat in general.
Right.
Because he can still punch things.
Mm-hmm. Possessions, weapons, and armor. Unless you guys come up with anything outlandish, I'm really not interested in nickel and diming and
a printing press that I don't keep with me, but it's back at home. Say we're based out of a home?
Yeah, how badass is blacksmithing in this world, right? The ability to actually forge metal, and you can make your little letters and have like your old school.
Yeah.
That's
so fun. You actually refurb like a movable type.
Yeah. It's a. I have a working printing press.
I mean, no possessions. Printing. Right. Printing press in Herman. Because I mean, obviously, it's not on you.
I have a backpack of notebooks.
Okay, it's so. I mean, once again, with the possessions, I mean, within reason. Brodor doing the river thing, you also might want things like a fishing line,
right?
Or a net or yeah, something.
I think, yeah, net, fishing, you know, bait, you know, fishing tackle is yeah. what I would put down.
I will also assume the boat has its own supply. So for things like if you guys need to pitch over a leak, you know, or something like that, I'm not going to be like, well, none of y'all have pine tar. Glub, glub, glub.
What would be a... For someone that's appraising a lot of things, you know, what would be good things that you would normally expect someone like that to have?
A loop.
Monocle looks, yeah. I say a monocle, it looks impressive.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking that was
jeweler's glass.
Yeah.
I was thinking something like that.
Magnifying glass or something. Magnifying glass, something else that you might want. Well, maybe.
Assortment of good condition books.
I was going to say, give yourself, this is just part of your stuff, but you can put down, steamer trunk of books, or two steamer trunks of books.
What's that? What do they call that staff that, you know, for ships that have that long staff that has the hook on it?
They call it a stick.
God damn it. I don't know. Because you read Wicked River, like, you looked at me like you had the legitimate term.
I don't know. We'll go with
son of a bitch.
We'll go with the shepherding term. You have a boat crook. And maybe that's correct. Maybe it's not. There's probably somebody who actually is a longshoreman or something listening to this right now that is defecating themselves.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that in this world, firearms are a rare commodity.
Depends.
Sure. I mean, if you're Black Ops frickin' Martian-based commandos.
Well, we'll come back to weapons.
You're laden in guns.
Let's start with base possessions. I'll come back to weapons.
A knife, some fishing tackle, a net, a boat hook. I mean, things that you would use for the trade.
Kind of an outrageous cod piece.
Hey, Chet Manley needs no cod piece. His erection is his armor.
That's true. By cod piece, he means an actual cod that he's took some strings in.
Yeah.
Wayne, did you eat sugarless candy? Because those farts are hardcore.
I haven't farted.
That wasn't you? Who tooted?
No.
Man!
when I am proud and I declare it.
Loud and proud.
I was going to get up to go to the bathroom, but you wouldn't stop asking me questions.
Yeah, no, I haven't let one all night.
All right, fair enough.
Game master, what do you need to go to the goddamn bathroom?
Yeah. So, all right, you guys keep working your possessions. I'm going to go pee and finish this out.
All right. What would be interesting for the character to have?
Pen, paper, writing implement, a writing kit.
Yeah, that I kind of all have with the backpack of notebooks. I have in mind for it.
I'm gonna write here normal travel stuff. That's clothes, socks, backpack.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Yeah. So I'm assuming we have, I don't know, you know, fucking tents and whatever BS that we need. Like, yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that we have some sort of way to, you know, create something over the top of the boat, you know,
canvas,
tarps, some sort of lean-to to avoid weather and, you know, things like that. And, you know, blankets, and because it's going to get cold at night and whatever.
I think Dan wants to keep it general. And definitely ask him when he gets back.
Yeah, no, I like General's good, man.
Because in a post-apocalyptic survival game, the tendency is to write down every stray button, because each of those items can be traded or used or leveraged.
Right, that can all be bartered, sure.
And that's just a real huge pain in
the ass. It's tedious.
Yeah, it is. It's one of the worst things about post-apocalyptic settings, in my opinion.
So I've added one of the things I had in mind is clothes, fine and standard. Mm-hmm. So he has his normal, what he wears every day and all of that. He has one nice suit.
Mm. Is it a pre-war suit or is it? Because it's like 150 years old.
No.
Yeah,
no. This is a...
Yeah, that's a costume.
He may have even picked this up in St. Louis while traveling or something, but he has one nice suit.
That reminds me, if your character has
which any, is, I would assume, rare in the
yeah. If your character has anything that is actually pre-war, that is an odd thing to have. Because it's 100 and friggin' 20 years old.
Right.
But possible to have. But I remember the very first time we played SOG, my character, who was born, like, he was 13 when the bombs fell, and it was like 50 years after the war or something. And it was like this real poignant moment. My character pulls out something from pre-war, and then all the other players are like, oh, yeah, I got that. I got one of those. Yeah. And suddenly everyone was a pre-war item collector. And it's just like, okay, guys.
Yeah. Dan, I added clothes. He's got the normal clothes here, but he has one fine suit that he got somewhere along the travels. Something that actually is
so how do you,
tailored.
How do you write, Wayne? Do you have pencils, charcoal, ink pen?
Yeah, I was thinking pencils, but now I'm kind of rethinking maybe pen.
I used to say, I assume the ballpoint requires a bit of technology manufacturer, but no fountain pens are relatively going to be done with an industrial level technology.
Do you have an abacus?
And there's always like, if they've gone far enough back, they could always go quill route, but I didn't want to go that far back. That's,
I mean, unless it's quills, a style thing.
I mean, quills too. People think quills because the movies, you got this huge ass feather. No, they cut that shit off. I mean, they're just like the size of normal pencils. Yeah. They're just sharp at the end. They don't have all that feather crap on them.
The difficult part of that is just you're dipping it in ink.
Yeah. You have an ink well, and then you also, you have to have other stuff too. You have to have a whole kit. You have to have a quill or a pen. You have to have an inkwell. You have to have, like, sand, I think. Mm-hmm. You have to have that press thing.
It dusts the page. Yeah. Right.
It's a lot of stuff. You have to have the proper kind of paper.
Yeah, I was originally thinking pencils, but now I'm thinking pens make more sense and are easier in the setting to deal with.
That's right. I wrote down clothes, period. Oh,
good.
I ain't naked.
Trying to think of something interesting and unique.
I am taking a sketchbook.
Okay. Chad, if you're teaching people to read, do you have something like one of those like small blackboards or a wax board or something to carry around?
Case of why is my dog smarter than my daddy?
I was thinking that he wrote a book teaching people to read. You know, it's See Jane Run, yeah. See, yeah, that sort of stuff, and it has it has tools in it so that he can teach people to read. It has the alphabet, and then it has, you know, the letters.
Okay, so you have your own, like,
textbook is the wrong term, but reader is the wrong term, but basically a tool that he uses to teach people to read that he wrote, and then he printed on his printing press. He's got like a zillion copies of them.
Okay.
So, and once he gets people started, like, because we're only in towns for a few days, right?
Or yeah, so well, probably, but
well, and it depends. I mean, sometimes we're in town for a few days, but other times we're in town for longer. The ship has to be repaired, we have to take on supplies, weather's really bad. He takes those opportunities to find new people that to kind of teach how to read. And he, like, is trying to create a network of people who can, like, teach each other. So maybe in one town, they have to spend a couple of weeks. And he's teaching a couple of people, like, how to read and then giving them the tools so they can kind of teach themselves, like a dictionary and all this other stuff. And then he goes to another town where he only has a couple of days. So he teaches people, like, how to write their name in the alphabet and gives them one of the readers. And he says, upriver, if you get to traveling that way, talk to this guy and this woman, and they can help you and teach you how to read, and then, you know, you can spread it and that sort of thing. He's really trying to spread it. It's not an easy thing because he can't spend like months in one place, but he's just trying to push the boulder of illiteracy just back just a little bit at a time, as best he can.
Okay, weapons.
What's the name of your boat?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know.
Chet Manley.
That's right. And that's something that I want to. That's something that I'm going to have to think about because I don't really have an idea for a name of the boat.
kind Herbert, of pre-
you have such nice handwriting.
Yeah. That's some, honestly, it's from dyslexia. Because I will write things. I am very deliberate in my writing. You know, because I'm in my head, I'm thinking consciously about each letter or number. And so I'm very deliberate in it. Yeah. But I mean, the Herman Munster came to mind, which I know that's the shit I hate about gaming, which I was thinking this is a total tangent. But I'm excited about the convention because con games to me are like the purge, like all of the shit that I would never do in my real regular game. I'm going to get all of that just crappy gaming and ugliness out of the convention.
Okay. I had two more items to mine. He has a blanket that was made by his mother.
Okay.
That she gave him when he left. And then his sister gave him a small carved wooden figure of a dolphin.
Hmm.
There was a book that he used to read her growing up that was about a dolphin. And that was her, this dolphin will protect you on the river. Never mind, dolphins aren't on rivers, but that's... That's kind of the whole history behind it.
That's way better than my plus three sextant.
So he has a couple of things that his family gave him as he left town the first time he's always kept with him.
All I inherited was debt.
And syphilis.
Brodor, give yourself local maps, pretend you have area maps or whatever.
All
right. And Chad, give yourself a embossing stamp.
Okay.
That's
because I'm a notary public.
Well, it's how you, or some kind of a seal. I don't care what it is, but you need some kind of a seal for your legal documents. So you can use, it can be an embossing tool you salvaged. It could be an item you picked up or had made do you sealing wax on.
Is this my personal seal, and then it's my reputation that gives it its weight, or is this like some sort of legal thing that I am qualified for by local
there's some
custom
authority backing it?
Yeah,
no, they're actually, you are bearing, because once again, because you're known,
mm-hmm.
you are giving your personal witness.
Gotcha.
That this was done. It's real. Mm-hmm. This is the authentic thing.
Okay. Can I have a bundle of mail as well that I'm delivering?
Yeah, that's fine.
Shh, no talk. Recording.
Okay.
Oh, that's so true.
Weapons. Tell me what you are interested in taking.
I am curious about availability and what I would realistically have. Now, in a post, I understand that people are going to be ugly and that there is going to be danger and that there is not traditional law enforcement. So having something to protect myself makes perfect sense.
A personal defense robot.
Really? I got a gladiator. Why not?
Brodor, okay. So hooligan type weapons are infinitely available. So
I found a stick. I shaved off the bark. I found some nails that I hammered into it. And then I found bolt cutters and I cut the heads off the nails. Right.
It's spear, knife, club, things like that.
I think it's safe to say you don't travel without a knife.
Yeah. Weapons that double as a tool. Also, axe.
Yeah. Knife I have on my character sheet, which makes sense.
All right. So if you want to go up from there, the most available ranged weapons are going to be ones that require very low level technology, which are going to be primarily two weapons. One
atlatl.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
first ranged weapon.
Yeah. Yeah. I say, if you want to go with the atlatl or a sling or something like that, that's fine. Bow and arrow. And then also something called, it's not a single weapon, it's a category of weapons called the dead man's gun. And the reason it's called a dead man's gun is twofold. One, because it requires a certain amount of desperation to have one. And so therefore, there's kind of a sense that if you have it, you may already be dead anyway.
Is that like those shitty little zip guns, right?
No.
Those...
But then secondly, they do have a slight chance of misfiring. And
right.
All right. But no, what they are is they are more like a blunderbuss. It's basically you have a firing mechanism, a tube. You put powder in it. You ideally put shot in it, may not be shot in it. And firing this thing will do an exceptional amount of damage at very close range and possibly damage the weapon or even blow it up in your hands in the process. But if it works, which it generally does, I mean, it's not like these things are guaranteed suicide. God help the person you just shot. Now, if you want a more sophisticated firearm, so you actually want like a bolt action rifle or a revolver, something like that, they are out there. They are available. Ammunition is in somewhat limited supply.
Can I get the seven of diamonds?
No, you could sell me, even in character creation, that if you want to have like a long arm and half a dozen rounds for it or something like that, I'd give it to you.
Yeah, see, I was thinking, I mean, if anything, if I had a firearm at all, I was thinking of something like a small, snub-nose, concealable, I can drop in my pocket kind of revolver.
My first character in SOG had two 357 Magnums.
Huh.
And he only had six rounds apiece on them. All in the cylinder.
That's it.
Never going to be more ammo for it. Unless I got a bullet to a fake thing. But he also had a
little five-shot revolver. There you go.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was thinking. But I didn't know realistically what kind of availability it would be.
But he also had a bow and arrow. Or bow and arrows.
St. Louis does have industrial manufacturing. They are making goods like this. So this wouldn't even have to be pre-war. It could be a pre-war item that's extremely well-serviced. Keep in mind, we have weapons of that age today that still fire.
Yeah.
But it is also possible this is something that was either made or remade from of general frame more recently. So yes, it is wholly possible you have a functional revolver, and if you want it to be like a, I mean, what are you talking, like a 38 special?
It doesn't have to be a hand cannon,
a good old Saturday night special, okay. And
I'm assuming post-war manufacturing is fine for me.
Yeah, that's fine. So, yeah, you have basically a Saturday night special, and I don't know, yourself like a dozen rounds for it.
All right.
How hard
would it be to get a, I'm thinking like a collapsible baton, like a normal ASP, like a police would have, like I keep in my car.
It's like one of these.
Yeah. Yes.
I've got everything you need for SOG in this drawer. Actually, I'm out. But that was the last item.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Are you taking any weapons at all?
No. I'm just going to hurt myself.
Probably.
Well, I thought I have it in mind as a smaller one than that one, but that's a pretty good size one. I think that's like maybe not twice the size of mine. Mine's much smaller. Much easier to conceal.
I'm going to take a lute, and I'm going to sing and give them a morale bonus.
Oh, my.
That's totally Huskies of Glasswork.
Shoot well, the cannibal.
I thought about the dead man's gun?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought about that only as it would be a sort of the, you know, quintessential mutiny stopper. All right, fuckers, that's fine. Somebody's getting cut in half.
Yeah,
it might be me.
I could die. You could die, or quite frankly, this just could be ground zero for a blast. But in these close quarters, do you really? I mean, you can have one. You can have a DMG that you keep loaded. That it's what you said it is. It's your. Yep.
Yeah.
It's
or
your,
you could even do like just a riot gun. Yeah, you know, just shotgun.
I say, or if you want something like you've got a double barrel sawed off and you have two cartridges, you know, it's the Mad Max thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have a double barrel shotgun. It's sawed off. It's a room sweeper. There are two cartridges in it, and that is the only two cartridges you have for it.
You know, I think I might do that. Just a room sweeper. It's just like, this is desperation time.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking about the Saturday Night Special. It would be in case of emergency. I mean, in most situations, I would hope that that loyalty and people who have skills that I do not possess will get us out of most situations. But in the event that I actually have to pull a weapon, I didn't envision having anything particularly big or scary or respectable. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I'm thinking I'm in towns negotiating. I want to have something on me.
Right.
How many do you want?
I don't know. Lots.
A case little, of them under
little you know, the mini. I have mini great shells.
Mini leather bound shells.
They've all been used and they're empty.
Get the man 2d6.
What? That's not a die. That's a freaking magic cube. I don't know what it is.
What does that mean? It means a spin. I don't know. Right, here, you give him the most metal of all dice. Give him a d12.
Oh, you're going to give him a d12. The most metal of all dice.
There you go.
Wow.
12.
Boom! Nice.
It's just that booming. Is
right, right.
All right, you have a sawed-off double barrel, and you got 12 shells.
Do you know how much those shells are worth? Because I could roll the praise and find out.
You're going to get your jeweler's loop out and like, this isn't even a shitty reload.
I could appraise them, but they're related to guns, so maybe you don't want me to. They might go off in my hand.
Okay. He trades for services, and he just got on a tear. It was like the craziest thing you ever saw. Every time he notarized something, settled a dispute, read somebody's mail, delivered a mail, they gave him a shotgun shell. Unrelated, it wasn't planned, it was a streak.
And a month later, he got a gun.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't even have a shotgun.
Well, that could have also been a pickup. You dropped off a intel thing. Getting you killed's a bad idea. Mm. And so next, when you went to do the reward pickup, instead of a little pouch of money, there's a sawed-off shotgun and 12 shells in there.
No. I like the idea of the streak.
It was a streak.
You just got the streak.
I've got shotgun shells and no shotgun.
No shotgun. It was
and
legendary.
You get to the last guy.
Yeah.
I've got a shotgun and no shells. Yeah. What are you giving me for this?
Right.
And you're like, nothing.
Nothing at all.
Nothing. It'll cover postage, I suppose.
Right.
I have no use for it.
It was his third leg of recognition. He just hit the amazing streak.
It was one of the tasks of Heracles.
right.
Was all right. Last off armor. All right. You can describe armor in Skies of Glass. We do deal with body locations, so you can describe armor broadly in six locations, which is the right leg, the left leg, the torso, the right arm, the left arm, and the head. All right, what I need to know is if you are wearing any armor at all, and if so, what is it made out of? From the lowest end, you have things like really thick cloth. Think you're wearing a really heavy winter coat or really thick leather. Up from that, you have things like actually treated leather, so like boiled leather or studded leather. Up from that, you have what's called scrap armor. Scrap armor basically means you took this is much more Mad Max. You took a stop sign and some tire retreads, and you found a way to bash it into a shape that generally protects your vital organs. Up from that, you actually get properly worked metal armors. And if you keep going up from that, now you're getting into technological stuff, Kevlar armors. I'm cutting you off there. There's no one at this table is going to sell me on having chitinous armor or
just a cod piece.
Just a powered armor, yeah. Cod piece.
What is the most powerful armor in the game? But all I have is the cod piece.
But he's a eunuch. Well, it's not protecting anything.
Hey, you know, min-max, why not?
You can't, I mean, I don't want to swim in heavy clothes, let alone armor. Yeah. I think that coming, you know, getting off the boat, falling off the boat, being forced to get in the water for some reason or another are all realistic concerns of my profession. So, I mean, armor is something that I don't know if I'm all that concerned about in terms of, I don't know if it just fits my lifestyle. You know what I mean?
Fine by me.
Now,
can I have a life preserver?
Yeah, I wouldn't consider it armor. I'd put it under possessions.
Yeah, I don't want to get shot, though.
So,
but
yeah, I'm thinking a nice leather duster, but it's not something he would wear, like, on the boat or anything like that. It's when he goes into town specifically to negotiate.
Is it internally or externally reinforced?
Nope.
Okay, so this is bottom barrel armor.
Yep, this is just the leather.
It's better than bear flesh.
Yep, it's the cow it came from. He knew as a baby. Its name was Bessie. It Bessie tasted good.
Yeah, I was gonna say, oh, she was delicious.
Yes. Yep.
So is it wearing armor? Is it just a common thing that people do? Or
I don't know.
It depends on where you're at.
I mean, broadly speaking, no. Most people do not walk around in armor any more significant than, assuming it's cold weather, heavy clothing. Now, if you find somebody who's like a Pathfinder, Scout, actual soldier, are they going to try and cobble something together? Yes.
Sure. Pirate.
Yes, they will probably
use your big stick to push those guys overboard.
Yeah. Well, the big stick, I always thought about taking it off my character sheet because I was like, that's just a tool on the boat. It's not really mine. I don't need to have it on my character sheet.
But
we have one. It is. It is. I'm compensating. That's why it's got that big hook at the end.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I sort of envision having a big, heavy coat for a situation. But like, oh my God, there's pirates coming. Let me put my big, heavy coat on so I have some armor.
Yeah,
but
it's more like if it's raining.
And yeah, yeah.
If you're out. And that's kind of why I have the idea of having the duster.
Yeah.
It's not something that he wears regularly, but he has one.
So is this more like armor? Is this more like an oiled poncho? Or is this...
Yeah, I'm thinking more like a heavy all-weather coat, right? I don't know if it would even qualify necessarily. I mean, it's not going to have any effect on a bullet, I presume. You know,
it's
negligible, right?
It's going to be so insignificant that it's not going to... I mean, it's better than nothing,
right?
But no, it's not going to have a significant impediment.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I don't think I need any specific types of armor, but we'll see how the game evolves and how the character grows and if I feel a need to have armor in the future.
The first one that I played in Brodor, after the first combat, he got a scar on his head and took one of the helmets from the dead bodies, and that was an armor he had because he was paranoid then about his head getting hit.
He did get it was a very, very, very low damage grazing hit to the head. Mm. But yeah, he was shot in the head. I'm like... Ooh. And then the guy just rolled jack for damage, which you don't have hit points. Basically, the higher the damage is, the worse the wound is. Mm-hmm. So if I roll real low level damage, you know, like a point or two or three, then you're looking at basically like a surface level graze flesh wound.
Yep.
But
it struck the character because he got hit in the head.
I mean, well, it's got to be a wake up moment to have a bullet not pierce, but skim your dome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's going to make you think twice about going to a Cardinals game.
Whoa. I'm good.
Somebody, a woman sitting in the stands at a Cardinal game, recently, like a night or two ago, got grazed by a bullet that they believe was shot from outside the stadium. She's sitting there and she... like felt a pain and looked down and saw that her arm was cut and she went to the first aid station. And when they did a search around her seat, they found the slug.
Wow.
And, so yeah, they think somebody arc fired it from outside of the stadium. It was apparently, I don't know. I mean, it was a relatively slow velocity and all that stuff. So
do they wear any kind of armor in St. Louis?
It depends on who you're talking to. Does the random average person on the street? No. Do the pit fighters or the actual standing army? Oh, hell yes.
Yeah. Do the masks?
Or
is it expected if you kill one?
Your biggest danger there is a social one.
Right.
That if you kill one, the retribution will be so extreme that you don't want to do it. Now, having said that, because of the fact that you're still taking risks and playing games, and everybody knows it, the houses are playing games with each other, it is not terribly uncommon for the house to actually armor them quite well under those robes. Now, that they probably would have paid more attention to you getting away with because of its scarcity.
Sure.
But it is possible that had you actually remained masked, that you probably would have actually... there's a chance that you would have on and off been wearing, like, Kevlar with trauma plate.
Okay.
Under that robe.
Well, should I roll the battle dice to see if I got something.
You know what? I you know my jamming philosophy. I'll let you roll on anything.
The most metal of dice.
The D12. 8.
An 8. I won't give you actual Kevlar.
A Kevlar codpiece.
Kevlar codpiece.
Oh my god.
I'll give you metal armor if you want it, like a metal chest plate that's, you know, partial leather, but will count as actual worked metal.
Can he carry that around with a body of 3?
Yeah, something of it.
Oh, okay. All right, so he has a metal chest piece?
Yeah, it basically has a metal chest piece. So your torso is covered and is covered by by worked metal. But no, this is not like some... You're wearing like a reworked like iron stove or something.
Right.
No, I mean, this is worked steel. This is not like cripplingly heavy.
Okay.
Especially to only have it on the chest.
And it's worked, but it's not like a stop sign that's...
No, this is not scrap. This is actually somebody hammered this out. You know, it's got the shoulder joints and such or leather and whatever. Yeah, this is not like...
Okay.
This is not scrap. This is high-end metal.
Cool.
Okay. Anything else? If not, then other than the names, the worst blank on the character sheet.
Chet Manley.
Yeah, I have to name a character, and I have to name the boat.
That's right.
And then, Wayne, can you do me a favor and take a picture of and text me... that thing right there.
Yep, that's what I figured.
And
I also already made notes of what all the cards were. But
yeah, if you want to text me a picture of that. So what I'm going to do then is I'll post this episode. And if you check where the episode is posted, I will have a link to a blank copy of the character sheet, a blank copy of the group sheet. And then we will also have a picture of the filled out group sheet. And then I will scan in the group template and my general questionnaire for you guys. The individual character sheets will come back to once we flesh them out and finish them up. But for now, we'll leave them be. So, all right. So, you three, Brodor will not be at the next game, but Eric will be. So I've got to try and figure out how to work him into the group template, see what he wants to be.
So are we actually gaming next time?
Yes, we will actually be doing the first game, not this coming week, but 2 weeks from today, and then gaming every other week thereafter. So, all right, you guys at home, take care.
Cool. Buck 'em.
So, do you want to hold on to our character sheets, I assume?
I'm leaving mine.